Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about last night, but even if I had been here, there would have been no show. It's a funny thing that I've noticed, and, you know, when you get older, you start paying attention to things like this because it makes your lumbago hurt, and you have to go get a mustard plaster and things like that. But anyway, about this time of year, around here, every year, we get a honking Jim Dandy dose of wind. I think the intelligent design of it is to blow down the rest of the trees and blow over your leaf piles so you get to do it all over again. And that's what happened. It's, you know, like 60-mile-an-hour winds rattling down the hollers around here. And I wasn't here. I was down in the Coal River Valley. But upon returning, I found out there was no electricity. Because, well, coal may keep the lights on, but it doesn't do it very well in the wind. One of these days, the power is going to go out, and I'm not going to be able to stop Agnes from picking up the phone and trying to find Don Blankenship's phone number and saying, "Hey, you pencil-thin mustache freak, I thought you said coal keeps the lights on. Well, it's not doing a very darn good job." "Well, ma'am, that would be Appalachian Power." "Nah, it's just the middleman. You're the one making the claim. Get the juice going, you fat freak." One of these days she's going to do it, because she was threatening to do it again last night. But anyway, everything went off here. The streaming computer went down. Eventually the battery backups gave way, and all the power went out. So even if I had been sitting here, there would have been no show. So my apologies. But there's a show tonight. We may have to do some backing up and catching up, but there is most assuredly a show tonight. So, well, you know, oh, be joyful. And my apologies for last night. So we will dive right into things. We might have to backtrack a little bit because we didn't really have an opportunity to do a whole lot of follow-up on President Obama's glorious announcement of the glorious escalation of our glorious war in Afghanistan. You know, when you think about it, wars in Afghanistan, that's the kind of thing that empires do. And you know what? The reason we don't do it very well is we're not set up to be an empire. The Constitution is not designed for empire status. And that's why we're not very good at it, I think. Because we're not supposed to be. But like I said, there may be some backup. I think it would be appropriate to look back to the aftermath of that really, really good speech. And just, you know, get a little sense of perspective. Of course, I don't know. Maybe everybody's, all the other liberal talk guys have already done this. But it somehow seems to bear repeating. There were, of course, right-wing hissies. Lou Dobbs had a hissy. Who the hell does this president think he is? President? But it's not that. It's not so much who President Obama thinks he is, as it is, who does the Congress think it's not? Now, I've been saying this for a long time now, but it bears repeating. If we want to make war on Afghanistan, the Constitution is rather explicit on how you go about it. Now, the president might ask for it, but it is the Congress's job to declare war on somebody. And maybe, just maybe, there ought to, some brave congressman ought to, I mean, you know, one of those that really believes in going and killing those Afghans, ought to tender a declaration of war that is in line with constitutional principles. Call me crazy. Call me a cab. And see how that flies. And if the Congress goes, oh, hell no, we don't want to do that, then they just can't vote any more money for the sort of empire wannabe adventure in Afghanistan. It's that simple. Well, it would be that simple if, you know, Congress wasn't covered up from floor to ceiling in hypocrites, but you know what I mean. Because the Constitution is rather explicit. No, it's not rather explicit. It is explicit. That only the Congress has the power to declare war. But why would we let something like the Constitution get in our way, get in the way of our attempt to join the Junior Empire Builders Club, huh? But I told you, and of course I don't think you were in much disagreement, I did tell you that the right wing, if Obama sent 30, would want 60. If Obama sent 60, would want 120. If he sent 1 million, they'd want 2 million. Told you, didn't I? Guess what? I was right. So here's how it shakes out. Monday evening, or Monday morning, I guess it was. Monday morning, Fox News contributor Karl Rove appears on the Today Show. What? There's nobody that NBC can find to go and talk to Matt Lauer besides Karl Rove, but they talk, and Karl Rove makes it, well, you know, he says, he's got an opinion about Afghanistan, right? Sure.
And you have said in the past that the president was wobbly on Afghanistan. He's going to announce tonight he's going to send between 30 and 35,000 additional troops there. Wobbly anymore, or is that a definitive action?
That's a definitive action, and if the president does do that, I'll be among the first to stand up and applaud.
Okay, you got that? I'll be among the first to stand up and applaud. Well, Barack Obama did that. So immediately, well, there he is in his natural home on Fox News. And remember, he was going to stand up and applaud?
But for now, the president should be as tough as he can be. And I didn't see that tonight, did you? I did not see a Winston Churchill-type performance. The president was slick, but did he rally the world to fight the horrendous Taliban? I don't think so, but I could be wrong. Summing up the president's speech tonight was, okay, but not exactly...
Don't worry, this is just Bill O'Reilly, and it's all the falafel talking.
Now, the top story, the best analysis anywhere. We begin with Fox News analyst Karl Rove. He's in Philadelphia tonight. You know, there wasn't the sense of urgency that you would expect from a wartime commander saying, look, these are bad guys. We're fighting evil. He didn't define the evil. He didn't get emotional. He didn't put any...
He didn't pull an Afghan baby out of his pocket and chew its little head off with his bare sharpened teeth.
Sorry.
Urgency behind his words. Like, if we lose, this is going to lead to more bloodshed all over the world. Let's wise up, everybody, and get in there and win it. I didn't see any of that. It was more like an academic speech.
Well, it was tired, and you're right. I mean, I think you might need a new teleprompter with some Energizer Bunny batteries in it.
Oh, Karl Rove, such a kidder.
The tonight was good news, but it was badly delivered in a, in a weak frame, and... I appreciate what he did. The core of it was, we're going to surge in Afghanistan like we did in Iraq. I'm going to send 30 of the...
Wait a minute. Wait. This is damning with faint praise. Where's the I will stand up and applaud part? Come on, Karl. Up. Out of the chair. Up, Karl. Up.
Here's some bleeding raw meat. Hold it up above your head. Come on. Up, Carl. Up!
No. Not so much.
40,000 troops that were that McChrystal requested. But, you know,
oh, see, I paused in the wrong place. Back up just a hair.
Any batteries in it. You know, it, look, at the core of tonight was good news, but it was badly delivered in a, you know, in a weak frame. I appreciate what he did. The core of it was we're going to surge in Afghanistan like we did in Iraq. I'm going to send 30 of the 40,000 troops that were that McChrystal requested. But, you know, reading the background briefing of the president.
Notice that? Well, he's going to send 30 of the 40,000 troops that McChrystal requested.
President's aides today to the press corps at West Point, I got more information about what they intended to do and how they intended to do it than I got from the president's
point.
He did not rally the country. He did not explain the stakes. He did not explain how he intends to do this. He did not, you know, it was just the high points. I'm going to send 30 to 40,000 more troops. They're going to go over there and do something really important, and then I'm going to start withdrawing them in 18 months.
Yeah, but I don't begrudge him withdrawing, though, because I think the Afghans have to step up.
But look, here's the point. We are where we are today, and the question is, does it serve America's strategic interest for the President of the United States to say, I'm going to surge these additional troops there, and the enemy knows that we're going to send one quarter less troops than was requested by the military commander, and then for him to say, in 18 months, I'm going to start withdrawing those people. That sends a very, very bad signal to the enemy that you can wait us out. And when he ended on that note that, boy, we got to worry about our economy and about America and coming back and taking care of things here. Look, we're not the only people watching and paying attention to that speech. That strikes.
Yeah, that worrying about the economy and America and stuff. That's socialism. That's downright communism, that worrying about America part. Dang, Karl Rove, thank God you're there to set us all straight. Yeah, it's not like I'm trying to rub anybody's nose in it, but it is true. The decision to increase troops in Afghanistan is still dead wrong. And it'll be wrong the next time that McChrystal goes to him and says, well, you know, boss, I asked for 40, you gave me 30. What I need's a million. Well, okay. All right. You need a million? I'll give you 500,000. I'll try to get by, Mr. President. It's just a little stunning. So coming forward into the present, there was a big jobs summit at the White House this afternoon. President Obama invited a number of economic leaders and labor folks and people like that, to, you know, smart folks, to come and talk about how to fix this busted up economy. And coming out of that, well, let me just read you the lead from the Associated Press. President Barack Obama says a jobs forum he hosted at the White House generated many useful ideas for jump-starting job creation, some of which can be put into action immediately by his administration. The president said Thursday at the close of the job summit that other ideas will become part of legislation for Congress to consider. He said he was most struck by the overlap between the sessions on specific topics, leading him to conclude that job creation needs to be better coordinated. And he went on to say that the private sector has to be the lead engine in job creation. I kind of hated to read that because I know what comes after that. That is followed by blast faxes and full page ads taken out. By, you know, the usual suspects saying, well, if you want the private sector to create jobs, Mr. President, what you gotta do is cut taxes. You gotta cut them taxes. You cut them taxes, Mr. President. Give us, come on, cut them taxes. Because the only way we can ever make a job is if you cut our taxes, you see. Because it's not true that we take all that money and stuff it in our pockets and then ship the jobs to China and Vietnam and Sierra Leone and places like that. Oh, hell no, we create jobs. Just don't tell him we're not creating them here. Don't smarten up the chump. You know that's coming. Because that's the way they... The jobless rate, by the way, is presently at 10.2%. And here's one of those little media moments. The story is covered on Time magazine. And one of the things that I love the way they write. It's just charming. Here's how Time writes about the current jobless problem. If voters are concerned about spending, they're even more worried about unemployment, which is at a 26-year high of 10.2%. Don't ask the American people to do math on the fly in their heads. 26 years and 10.2%? Too much math. The way you really write that sentence is unemployment, which hasn't been this high since Ronald Reagan was president. Because you know what? Assuming that there are Americans out there still reading Dead Tree Time, they will look at it and say, "What? But I thought Ronald Reagan was Jesus' best friend. He never had no unemployment." Yes. Yes, he did. And while what is going on here is god-awful, it is no worse, arguably, than what happened that Ronald Reagan did to us. And, of course, Ronald Reagan was followed by Ronald Reagan. George W. Bush, on the other hand, was followed by Barack Obama. It's just another one of those little times when Repiglican policies come home to roost. And they come home to roost not on the well-to-do, not on the silk stocking crowd. No, hell no. No, those vicious birds come home to roost on the backs of you and me. And it's a hard damn thing to deal with, isn't it? Oh, we've got an abundance of things to go into. Somewhere along the way, we've got to get into this Uganda business. Somewhere along the way, we've got to talk a little bit about what the New York, the state senate of New York did to gay people. I saw one protest sign saying, "I'm moving to Iowa." You know, if the gay population of New York City moved to Iowa, it would be the worst thing that ever happened to New York and the best thing that ever happened to Iowa. But we need to talk about that somewhere along the way. Still enshrining bigotry. You know, little baby empires, taking those toddler empire steps, it's just not so charming. Because that's the way empires behave, too. Let's go to the phones. About 19 minutes past the hour. You know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on. You can reach Direct Dialwise at 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And we will now go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for taking my call.
I wait all night for calls like these.
I know you do. Just when I was just kind of reflecting on, I'm so grateful that I missed the prayer meeting and the preacher didn't show up and whatever. I just get Carl who rolled. Oh, my God, isn't he dead or something?
Yeah, don't we wish? Well, I mean, he's undead. You know, they hang him up by his heels every night and put him in a box with some native soil from the old country, that kind of thing.
And all that stuff. Now I understand why I don't have TV. Oh, God.
Basically, Karl Rove is the Renfield to Cheney's Dracula.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yes, Martha.
God, oh, those guys. Oh, whatever. Iowa, huh?
Yeah. How you feel about Iowa?
Well, same way I feel about New York. I lived in New York, and I lived in Montana. It's just kind of like Iowa, so, you know. I didn't really have anything on my agenda tonight, just except to just call in and say hi. And I'm still on the low desert in Arizona, recovering from whatever the hell hit me. I feel like I've been run over by one of those coal trucks on the mountainside. You know, them big ones, those monsters.
Well, you know, you can just stand on the side of the road and get passed by them and get sick from the dust blowing off of them.
I'm telling you, I've been there. They scared me to death. Oh, God. excuse me. God, it just left my mind. Oh, and I heard from Highlander. I've been in touch with her all the time. I told her I was leaving in October and heading toward Montana and Tacoma on the way to Highlander, and I know that you'd have to know me better to understand why that makes sense to go to Seattle than not to get to East Tennessee.
Hey, so, you know, Columbus wanted to get to India by sailing west, you know?
And whatever.
And you can sympathize.
Yeah, I sure can. I missed the big river by many, many miles this trip. I just had to head south to get back to the desert. So anyway, I'm just pretty pumped about still, it's still my passion to get back there on sacred ground, and I'm getting good lessons in East Tennessee. I'm learning Big Orange, on Saturdays, and then I'm learning to speak Vince Young on Sundays, and you know that's pretty fun stuff, huh?
Well, you know what? If you do get back there in time, and the thing is still going on, maybe you can slip down to Monroe County and be our Monroe County, Tennessee correspondent for the ongoing, treason indictment of Barack Obama by Commander Fred McMurray or whatever he is down there.
I know not what if you speak, but I don't know about being a correspondent either. That sounds like a what, Obama? Impeach him or what?
No. They're trying to, there's a loopy guy down in Monroe County, Tennessee, trying to indict Barack Obama in a Tennessee grand jury for treason.
Oh.
I mean, that would just that would have to be some of the highest entertainment of the year.
Sure enough.
I mean, being as how, you know, a county grand jury can't indict for treason or anything.
Oh, no, right. That's why I'm going, I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, so I could Google that, right?
it's out there somewhere, but you got to be careful because the crazy just drips off the page.
Is that Monroe County, Tennessee?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I don't know how close that would be to. Of course, I can Google that too. I do have an atlas. I can find my way to East Tennessee. And also, I wanted to. I suppose you still didn't even make half of November's contributions.
No, we had a couple of kind contributions come in to get December started, but no. Well, we wound up kind of halfway there for November.
That's what I was afraid of. I was happened to be listening to some people talking the other day about midnight sales and all that stuff, and you know, and they're clearly underemployed or they work at Walmart or some crap. I don't know. Anyway, when I hear there just isn't any money, I don't have any money, I don't have any contribution, that gets me crazy because sometimes, some places, there is money, and it dawned on me today while I was mopping my floor that if people, since it's tis the season to be jolly, oh, come all ye fretful, you know.
There's one.
That's not mine. I stole it. When people are out shopping at the stores buying China junk for the kids and stuff, if people could just take 10% of whatever that purchase was going to be, even if it's a $25 one, and just put that aside, just tally that up, and then don't buy such an expensive item, and then send a little bit of money just to PayPal or to the address on the webpage for contributions for December. I mean, there is money. If you've got money to go in a store shopping for family and friends and people who don't appreciate Christmas and whatever, I was not going to go there. I didn't.
No, I understand, but no, it's true. It gets a little sweaty because where we have been able to cover some costs out of our own hide because of things that are pressing down around here, around us, we're not going to be able to do that.
Right. I know, but I was just saying that some people are able to do that. And if you're in the audience, if you're out there Christmas shopping, just cut back about 10% of what you were going to buy on that gift, that item, and put it in an envelope and send it. I remember it would only be $2.50. That's all the money I got. I remember Wayne saying one time, I think it was Wayne going to the mailbox, and he was brought to tears by a person's little contribution. I don't know if it was even $5. Maybe it was $5. The guy said, I thought that this, I'm pretty short, but I thought this time I could go without my popcorn for a week. So here's what I've got left. And Wayne said he just stood there and cried, you know, appreciation. So the contributions don't have to be big and elaborate, but, you know, if we bombarded the mailbox $2.50 or $5 bills or $10 bills to get you guys through the, you know, at least get the November bills paid. Because I'm telling you, it's anybody notice how bad it's gotten? How bad it's gotten? I mean, the world is getting crazier and crazier. And if we lose you and Malloy, Hartman's gone total corporate and doing GM cars and whatever. And NPR is all corporate, and they won't even cast aspersions on, never mind. We don't have any voice anymore, and so if we lose you and Malloy, we are freaking toast. We're out here all by ourselves watching Fox News. You want Glenn Beck? You got Glenn Beck. Put your money back in your pocket. Anyway, I just wanted to...
Yeah, and you can think of me standing off somewhere with a cold mic. Or nowhere near. The mic cold and me nowhere near it, standing off somewhere saying, "Welcome to Walmart. Want a buggy?
Have a good day." Oh, God. Yeah, I shudder. Anyway, and I don't have a thing to say about what's going on. You all know how I feel about the man in the White House, and I'm not surprised, and I'm disappointed that there was so much shock and awe after the speech. I mean, come on. Y'all knew it was coming. God. Anyway. So I'm going to hang up now and wait for a better day when there's more to talk about and good news.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. No?
Well,
I noticed also on the web page, it takes the web page a half an hour to load on my computer, so I imagine I don't know what that's about, whether it's because there's so much YouTube stuff or pictures or information, or it's gotten bigger, or if there's some kind of glitch behind the firewall or something, I don't know. But anyway, it took me a long time to get into the web page. I can't even get in most of the time. When I listen to archives, I mean, that's how I listen to the show, is archives, because I can't get in anywhere else. I mean, on the web page. So, anyway, it took a very, very long time this afternoon to get in. So, I don't know if the internet's slow or if.
Well, I think there's still a link over at WhiteRoseSociety.org too. That might
there
be.
There is, and the buffer doesn't load, and doesn't work. I'm not to listen to the show. So I just go to the archives every night after Mikey, and that satisfies me.
I think your boys at Verizon are laying down on the job a little bit, Kate.
Well, I have four bars. I mean, out of five, I don't know what five would matter. So maybe it's my computer. Maybe.
Or it could be the bandwidth. I mean, you can have four bars of low bandwidth, and it's no help. But you know, maybe I don't know. Maybe we can tech this out and diagnose it a little bit, because you know we run a low bandwidth stream that'll even run on dial up.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's still there.
I don't have dial-up though. Would it work on?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you can run the, there's almost, that's what I'm getting. There's almost nothing that won't run the dial-up stream.
I mean, if I logged on the dial-up stream using my broadband for internet access, would it?
You should get it like that.
Oh, really? I thought you had to be on a modem to do that.
No, that's just, it's just really, really, really low bandwidth.
Oh, hell, well, okay. Sorry, audience, we're taking up all the time with the...
No, you know, we do tech support, too. This is, you know, this is an internet-based program, Kate, and if we were terrestrial, there would also be time for, you know, push the button that says AM.
Turn the
dial to the right, or to the right, well past where it says Connell Rand.
There's a band of men in the trees, and
you know it. No, it's a full service radio show, for crying out loud.
Well, okay, thanks for the tech support. I'll probably just log off and shut everything.
Well, it might make listening to Malloy a lot easier too.
Oh, I hear him. I've got Sirius.
Oh, well, okay, yeah.
So,
that's true.
Here's a question that somebody in the audience might answer, because I haven't heard back from them yet. Who pays for all of the Obama billboards or spots, whatever they're called, the little sound bites that come in over and over and over and over on AM Left 146 or whatever the left is on? Who pays for that time on Sirius?
Oh, that would be interesting. Not having Sirius, that's like telling me about, you know, goats wandering out of the pen. I mean,
how does the person get on Sirius? How does it, do you have to pay?
Well, if they're ads, you obviously have to pay. If it's part of programming time, I mean, does it happen during a particular show?
No, it happens all the time.
That might just be part of their promo schedule. I mean, they think that,
they think they're freaking, okay, this is what I didn't want to tell them. If you think this is a public service announcement, I am sick of hitting my mute button, and I can't even threaten to cancel my subscription, because then there goes Malloy and, Canadian Broadcasting. Those are the only two things I listen to. Oh, except when I want music, but God, it's just, I'm just totally addicted to CBC because they're so different.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you can pull it off or not, but if you could sneak into the chat room for... Well, No. Never mind. No, back up. I will ask that these two links be emailed to me, and I will email them to you, and they are direct links to the dial-up stream.
Oh, I have them on the.
One is okay. KincaidModem.pls, and the other one is KincaidModem.m3u.
Well, just email them to me later when you've got time, so I appreciate it. Thank you for the tech support and forever. So anybody, you know, when you're out Christmas shopping, just put about 10% of what your purchase was going to be in an envelope and send it to West Virginia, because we sure do need to keep this mic hot. I don't want to keep harping on this, but I'll say it one more time. Without Malloy and Kincaid, we are toast out here in the wilderness, so...
Well, you have worked your magic once again, because $25 just kindly rolled in.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now,
ELO tells me that she is emailing you these links even now as we speak.
Okay, she's home.
Yes. Oh, yes.
She's clearly not doing this from a hospital bed.
No.
Can you give me a brief update, or I can email her?
Probably best carried out between you two.
Okay. And what about our man, Peter, in Florida?
I emailed Peter some happy Thanksgiving greetings. Haven't heard back. But the last I heard from Peter, he said he was just continuing to recuperate and slowly getting better.
Yeah, cool. Is his partner okay, home, family problems over with?
Well, no, Larry, I think, is still up where Larry is.
Yeah,
and...
yeah. Damn. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the program on archives tonight. I'll just lose a little sleep. That's okay. I can sleep in.
And, you know, you're 3 hours behind us, so.
Yeah.
No, or two. Are you two? I don't know.
I'm on the same as Mountain Standard Time.
Okay, so you're 2 hours behind us.
Two, yeah. So anyway, say hey to everybody, and at some point you could probably play, Nightfly.
Okay, then. Yeah, we haven't heard the Nightfly in a while.
No, not since I called in October with pneumonia, which is getting a little bit better, but my vitality is still kind of in the toilet. I mean, I have bursts of energy and walked a quarter of a mile. Well, I can walk a quarter of a mile two or three times a week, and that's pretty good. But the rest of the time, I just want to kind of sit and stare. But I'm motivated to get to East Tennessee. So.
Well, don't hurry it along.
I won't. I won't. She said, take care, get well. Take care and get well. And when the universe moves you, we'll be here. So there you go.
Beautiful thing.
Sounds like I got a job, huh? Who'd have thought that, huh?
Hot diggity.
Yeah. All righty, then.
You're going to be the coolest librarian in East Tennessee.
Because I work for free. And I can speak big orange.
Hot diggity.
Check y'all later. Thank
you. Yeah, work on your Rocky Top now.
Oh, oh boy. I could even, yeah, never mind. I was going to go.
If you can't sing Rocky Top, they won't let you stay.
I was going to go someplace where Dolly is, and but I'm not even going to go there, so never mind. I don't want to get into that. Take care, y'all, and give my love to the redhead.
I sure will. We'll talk to you soon, Kate.
Okay, bye-bye.
Later. Bye. And we will get the Nightfly in here in a little bit. But at about 23 and a half minutes before the hour, we will keep the phones rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
You knew I was coming. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just in defense mode of glorious leader Barack Hussein Obama just because I'm so used to fighting with the hordes of ignorance on the internet, with all the nonsense that we are bombarded with. I guess one thing I can say is we have enough history that you know exactly where I stand on Afghanistan, and I've stood since before Bush invaded that place and carpet bombed it, and so on and so forth. And as you certainly pointed out, the right wing always wants to do more. You know, why can't we have total war? Why can't we go in there and bomb and nuke and torture and murder and rape and pillage and do all those things that you know in their deepest heart of hearts they really want to do? Because they think that that's what won World War I and World War II, without the clarity of knowing that World War I had a 5% civilian casualty rate and World War II had around 11%, not counting Holocaust-ish type things. I'm talking just battle. Iraq, well, Vietnam was in the 70s, and we all know where Iraq is. It's even higher than that. In Afghanistan, let's see, we killed the equivalent, I remember keeping, just to keep track of the stat in my head, we killed the equivalent to what we lost on 9/11 in around 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, and obviously we far surpassed that. But let's get, one thing to kind of get to is, I just got to say it. And even though, I'll play devil's advocate or what have you, but Barack Hussein Obama has not done the worst job in terms of cleaning up Bush's complete and utter catastrophe.
I would agree with you.
Okay. I just had to, do that. He certainly, is there room for improvement? Do I have to ask that question? We know that there's massive room for improvement. There are massive things that we have to accomplish. There are huge hurdles in just people's understanding of the issues that, need to be even tackled without, all of a sudden, some hacker stealing some emails that talks about a mathematical trick and a this and a that, and I'm sick and tired of these global warming deniers. Keep that bastard off the journal, and then that shows that the Arctic ice is even higher than it's ever been, right? No. We're still achieving a climate change. You see, they'll always talk about, and I remember telling you this 2 years ago or thereabouts. Remember I talked about sunspots and weather and how all of a sudden we're going to see the Earth start cooling down until we get back into this maximum. We're going to see this start cooling down, and what is the right wing going to say? No global warming, blah, 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 blah. Well, solar cycle 24 is starting to kick back in. Now, granted, I'm in Wisconsin. I'm way up here. It's dark at 4. That's another reason I haven't been around, because every time I turn around, there's some sunlight. I turn around, and 6 o'clock looks like 9 o'clock, and I'm about ready for bed. So, that's completely, it's amazing. I mean, it is literally pitch black out here right now, pitch black, and snow is falling, unbelievable. It's just, I hate this weather. I got to go to the equator. Anyway, I just need more stability in my son. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
Yes.
I just, you know,
and I think I've got you a bumper for this evening, too.
Anyhow. You know,
we'll just get them all out of the way in one fell swoop here in a little bit.
They're piling up. We got two. No, but seriously, honestly, we're sitting here looking at a literal, it's a huge mess. It's a giant mess, and, well, we've talked long enough to know that this was coming a long time coming. You know, we see job numbers now, and it's, you know, I knew it was at 10 already, but, you know, with all the, what do they call it, the gerrymandering, what is that called?
Gerrymandering.
Yeah, all the gerrymandering of how they take you know, heed of these statistics, you know, by the Bush administration turning McDonald's jobs into manufacturing jobs, okay? Like, just, oh, yeah, they manufacture hamburgers because they don't really make the bastards. They just take them out, put them in...
I am a pickle placement engineer.
I mean, come on. Yeah, how's that degree treating you? I mean, you know, so we've had a long time of this long slide. They put every break they could on actually getting the real numbers. I hope, in a sense, I hope he becomes honest. I mean, one thing about, you know, just because I have to address this, and I'm going to get to Afghanistan, but, you know, I have to address this just because these are things that I've been warring with. You know, Barack Obama spent more money than blah, 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 right? And the biggest thing that just screams out in my head is, no, he's taking into account the Bush administration's wars that they didn't feel like, come on. Bob, I don't know if who or what in your household, but I'm sure this is familiar to anybody listening. One, the husband either has the card or the checkbook or the wife, right? And when you have that kind of team, like right now, well, I don't like writing personally, so I'd rather have the card. It's a little easier for me, and, you know, it's easier to keep track of the kids when I'm doing all that. So I have the card, the wife has the checkbook. The hell and fury that rains down on my head if I don't tell her if I spent $12 here and $24 there is unbelievable. And we all know why, because when we're talking about people in our economic class, we're talking about people that if we do not keep a track of these $12 and $24 charges, well, the bank can just say, well, you know, we'll hold that until we don't have any more. Well, we're going to clear it, and next thing you know, boom, 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 and you get all these non-sufficient funds, and you owe them $300. And they like to play that game. You know that. Everybody who's in our economic spectrum knows that. You know, if you're rich enough not to notice, then you're not in that class. So, anyhow, I don't understand how anybody can even attempt to never address that whole topic. When we talk about the money that a Barack Obama is spending, Bush didn't count, I want to drop an F-bomb here. He didn't count the wars. Two wars he didn't count.
Off the books.
Off the books. Paid for with money borrowed from China. You know, and I can understand outrage on Barack Hussein Obama, okay? And granted, as long as you don't talk about birth certificates and how he's a reincarnated pharaoh and a clone being from some crazy New World Order, you know, laboratory somewhere in Area 51, if you don't start talking like that, I can try to maintain some level of calmness and not go completely haywire, you know, because we all knew, and I mean, it was hammered home as to where Barack Hussein Obama would be when he named Rahm Emanuel, which makes me sick.
Now, yeah, that was kind of a little tip-off, wasn't it?
It was. That was my first initial, the balloon's deflated, okay?
Of course Obama will be a friend to Israel. It's not like he's some Arab scrubbing the floors. Remember that one?
Anyhow, yeah, we know who that is. And it's family. There's people eating. There's probably kids listening. You know, I can rattle them off, and I don't want to. But so I'm going to have to use different vocabulary.
You're going to work at it.
I'm going to try. And, you know, we sit here listening to this and listening to that and all this other nonsense when, you know, I don't know if you know this or not. And it may not be every bill that I'm completely, you know, flipping upside down and doing somersaults for, because he's got a lot more bills to sign that have a lot more meat to them. Okay, that's just in the cards for him. But when we sit here and look, this man has signed 14 bills or 13 bills. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Bush signed 3 in his first year or first 12, 10 months address, you know, besides that they didn't account for the wars and stuff like that, is they did so many outrages. There's so many of them that you forget. We forget. When was the last time you heard Enron talked about in terms of California's budget crisis?
Oh, you mean with specifically within those terms?
Yeah.
Well, no, never. Never. Not.
Yeah. No, it doesn't happen. Yeah, when Bush came in, and everybody forgets this, right? We're still in the halcyon days of Clinton, right? The best Republican president this country's ever had. Now, and that's the truth. He was. Excellent. I could deal with a Republican like him more than I could deal with a Republican scum like Bush or McCain or Palin and these people. I mean, if anybody here, here's one thing to go look at. If you don't want to hear me ramble, go to The Onion and watch how the GOP resurrected Ronald Reagan and he's the zombie Ronald Reagan. Go watch that. No, that's just...
First yeah, zombie reference of the evening, Albert.
I had to. Well, it's been a while, and yeah, the prayers haven't been answered yet. But anyway, because, you know, that's almost our only hope. Sometimes, someday.
Zombies.
I like to be hopeful. You know, I got my silver paint, and I'm not huffing it. I'm just putting it on the clouds, these dark clouds.
Right.
Because it is.
But the fumes can still get to you a little bit here and there. I mean, no matter how careful you... The fumes can still get you no matter how careful you are.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah, I hope not. Anyhow.
Well, let me just throw a couple your way, just for the sake of discussion and fun. These are some dueling quotes from over at Bart Kopp. Obama Tuesday night. We did not ask for this fight. George Bush. We did not seek this conflict. Barack Obama. New attacks are being plotted as I speak. George Bush. At this moment, terrorists are planning new attacks. Barack Obama Tuesday night. Our cause is just, our resolve unwavering. George Bush. Our cause is just, our coalition determined. Barack Obama. This is no idle danger, no hypothetical threat. George Bush. The enemies of freedom are not idle. It's a little disturbing.
Okay, no, hang on, though. I hope you know what I'm going to say. What is Barack Obama very good at?
Speechifying.
Speechifying, right? And I'm calling what he's really good at. I'm going to call it political jujitsu. This is why I kind of laugh when people talk about how, oh, he's going to be the next Jimmy Carter. He's not. he's, you know, I hear those terms. I heard those terms. But, you know, there's some other quotes that Barack Obama had in that speech that George Bush never would have even come 10 light years within.
Oh, true. Those were the things that Karl Rove was having a hissy about, Albert, saying that he was weak and half-hearted, you know, because, again, he didn't pull an Afghan baby out of his pocket and chew its head off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I'm sorry. I've still got a lot. Because the fact of the matter is, there's a great column, and it's well worth the effort. Cindy in Washington sent it along to me. Over at Open Left by David Sirota. The title of it is, How Do You Ask a Man to Be the Last to Die for President Obama's Political Image? And there are...
Can we just pause there?
Yes.
Just pause there for 1 second?
Sure.
Because now I have to say my point. Of, you know, I heard what you said, and I understand where you're coming from. I absolutely do. But just recall, I have always been against Afghanistan.
Right.
There was no point in no way, shape, or form. I understand it made you upset that they destroyed the Buddhas, and the Buddhist in me gets upset about that history, you know, because then we lose the whole track of Jesus going out there and all that. So anyway, but, you know, let's not get to that level.
Yeah, that's Wednesday.
We'll talk about that Wednesday. And I look forward to that. So anyway, because I think that's one of those things. And I'm trying to get my kids and the evangelical stuff, the in-laws, and so I kind of have to try to trying to figure out how to frame it for 5-year-old mind. But anyway, that's my little task at the moment. We're talking about Afghanistan. We went in there, carpet bombed the hell out of them. You know, we're all gung-ho about it. You know, we failed here and there, left and right. And the real aspects of the failures, it's the same failures that were in Iraq, is when we went into Iraq, who did we send to fix the bridges? Did we send money and materials? No. we sent corporations, which then used price cost plus to order the materials.
Right.
And send our, you know, that was our way to kind of boost unemployment or something ridiculous like that, you know, or to keep, you know, people from losing their, you know, McMansions or whatever it is, you know, a plumber living in a, you know, $500,000 house in this gated community. Yeah, okay. Anyway, you know, we sit there and we look at that and we see Afghanistan. Obviously, it's slid off the radar because we all know what the hell we went in Afghanistan for. We went in there for the UNICAL pipeline. We didn't go in there to liberate anybody or to educate any women or to bring any freedom whatsoever to these people. Now, one interesting thing, and I believe it was you who brought it up, is that the Afghans already sort of have a democracy. It's a very primitive form, but it is a form of democracy where all the people get together, they vote their village elder to go see whom, and they say their point.
Yeah, the Loya Jirga principle.
Yes.
In fact, oddly enough, Dennis Kucinich has been trying to educate the public on that principle. I don't know how much luck he's having with it.
Who's loyal? What? Over like a fan.
Well, no. Well, exactly. There's a clip out there, as a matter of fact, and I think it's at Kucinich.us or something. Mm-hmm. There's a clip of him talking to highly telegenic spokeshead Anderson Cooper.
Mm.
And Anderson's got his squinty face on, so you can tell he's really paying attention to Dennis.
Yeah, yeah.
And at one point, Dennis brings up the issue. He says, you know, the Taliban's not going to be able to get a foothold back in there because the Taliban got a foothold the first time through because there was a collapsing central government and that had already eradicated the millennia-old structure that was already in place, the Loya Jirga. And he mentions Loya Jirga, and he says, you know, and with functioning Loya Jirgas over there, the Taliban will not be able to get a foothold. To which Anderson Cooper, telegenic spokeshead, really, really supposedly smart TV news guy, responds, well, yes, Congressman, but even if those loyal Jirgas are... Now, bear in mind the word is Loya, second word is Jirga, and highly telegenic spokeshead Anderson Cooper has just turned it into an issue of whether or not they are loyal to us.
Okay.
If he had followed up by saying, brought to you by Carl's Jr., it couldn't have been plainer.
I heard somewhere that they were going to start paying people this advertisements. I'll have to go find the story again. This was a couple weeks back. I'll send it to you. I'll Gmail it to you.
You know, I think after as much as we've done, we've got a right to send Carl's Jr. a bill. But that's okay because President Not Sure is out there hustling for AT&T wireless now. I don't know if you've noticed or not. No, you haven't.
I don't. Well, you know me. I've killed television a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't mind a couple of programs here and there, but it's the commercials.
Yeah, Joe's put on some weight, and he's throwing postcards around a big map of the United States.
Anyhow, back to Afghanistan.
Yeah, right, sure. Sorry.
All right. Now, here's my silver lining. Here's my hope. Here's what I do hope that he's a black belt in political jujitsu. Jimmy Carter wasn't. But Barack Obama is. And what I'm hoping is one thing that is true, without a doubt, is we have a huge mess over there. Now, am I afraid of people? No, I'm not afraid of that. I ain't worried about that. I don't sweat terrorists or terrorism. I think if you really wanted to pay attention, you don't ignore the red flags, number one. You know, you try to make sure, you know, your borders are somewhat secure, number two. You know, all these kinds of little things that we can get into in other days, okay? There's a bunch of different ways that we can keep the whole land. You know how much I love that term, but we can keep it safe, right?
Yep.
Now, blah, 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 blah. We're sitting here looking at Afghanistan. What I would like to see is if we're going to use true, we have to clean this mess. We have to clean this mess. It's a mess. We have to clean it. We have to. On principle. And that's why, in a sense, this is what gives me hope and it gives me the gall to say this, is when he does talk about, and by 2011, we're out. Right? Are we completely out? No, we won't. We'll still have here and there and little bases and so on and so forth. But another thing about me in terms of the internet is I plunge deep into the tubes. You know, I missed tons of video. Guys, go to Live League. You'll see so many videos of Apache gunships and all these other things. You can't hide from these things. Our military, we spend so much money, and it's a good thing. I mean, if you're going to talk about who wants the best toys, it makes me sick that we spend all this money, but we do have some toys. These people can't escape from us, okay? And if there are certain regions here and there, we go, okay, you see this region here, this valley here, you have X amount of time to give this and that, or total war is committed on this area. People that are villagers, they'll leave. People that are, they'll give up. They'll do these things and realize, in the sense that if we go in there with the stick that we have to go in there with, we have it. We have to go in there with it. What are we going to do? Not use it? Stand there impotent? We can't. And it's not me. You think I want this? I don't want this. I never want to go to the frickin' first place. But the problem is we're there and there's a fire. And we have to contend with it. And in a sense, if we play our cards correctly, and we don't make any massive blunders, and we don't worry about, you know, doing the horrible things that we've done in the past under Bush, and we do this with a different hand, with a different set of gloves on, okay, with some real structure and infrastructure building in this.
Can I call time for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And again, not trying to rain on your parade either, but the guy who's running this show, it ain't new gloves. It's old gloves that have been whitewashed, because the guy who's running this show is the guy who whitewashed the friendly fire killing of Pat Tillman.
True.
I wouldn't trust him with the corpse of a squished skunk.
Oh, and this is, but that goes without saying. These are government people, okay? What I'm kind of saying is that I would like to see not just troops, okay? I would like to see, and I would hope that Barack Obama's jujitsu is honed enough to realize that even though the Karzai government is disgusting, okay, we have to do is build an infrastructure, not to support them, but underneath them to support
them. Oh, see, you and Kucinich, you're on the same page with your loyal Jurgas.
Well, exactly. Oh, absolutely.
And you know, and it's the same thing we've said a million times over with government, trying to impose, there's that word, change on government here. Quit running people for Congress. Quit running people for president. Quit running people for governor. If you're a devoted third party type, for Christ's sakes, get out there and run for county surveyor. Get out there and run for, alderman. Get out there and run for county commission.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing higher than your state legislature. Run for prosecutor if you're a lawyer.
Yep, school board.
School, oh, hell yes, school board.
Yeah. Get on there. You know, when they try to sit there and remove Huck Finn, you sit
stick
there
it in them and break it off.
Yeah. No, hang on. Maybe we should read the prologue. You know, I'll give him the disclaimer. We'll read Mark Twain's prologue and how he explains how he uses the language in this book. Have you read that part? Because if you read that part, that makes the whole other part a little bit more.
Kind of makes it makes it a little more make sense and stuff. Yeah. Oh, I know.
That's
I know.
The narrative of a character.
No. Well, you know, you're tapping into something, Albert, that I think is interesting insofar as our friend Dwayne Hunn, who was on the show a couple of months back talking about the American World Service Corps principle that he has. I had an email from him saying, you know, if we're going to do this surge, then let's surge in 100,000 American World Service Corps workers.
Absolutely.
No guns?
Nope.
Lots of shovels?
Yep.
Lots of wheelbarrows?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of willingness to learn language?
Yeah.
Let's
send a garbage warrior.
Yeah.
Let's teach these people how to build homes out of the local resources in a more efficient way, that they can have air conditioning naturally. They can have clean water. They can have this and that. And then they don't have to worry about a lot of these things that they do currently have to worry about. Let's send him in there. What's his name? Mike?
Yeah. I've got the film here.
Let's do that. Let's pay up some people to pound dirt into tires, because you know there are a bunch of ruined vehicles out there. I'm sure there's plenty of tires bouncing around. Let's get some stuff. Let's exactly do that. And that was my point. And I understand why you're upset about going into Afghanistan. I understand this whole concept of of Jesus. I remember talking to you, we talked about this for hours in terms of empires, in terms of what this country was sitting in terms of an empire under George W. Bush. You know, and one thing, I mean, granted, it's I know it's the new boss, same as the old boss. There's more pepper in this one. It's a tiny little bit different. And with that tiny little crack, right, you know, one of my main issues is, because I've seen it firsthand in my life, one of my big issues, because it's symbolic to a lot of things as well, is medical marijuana. Now, we all see these reports coming out showing, oh, wow, it does have this, it does have that. Even the American Medical Association, after 70 years of saying, oh, it's not, you know, it's a one of them degenerates.
Mother stabbers, father rapers.
Yeah, exactly. Now, all of a sudden, now the American Medical Association is talking about how it does have medicinal effects. And it does without no doubt, without, there is no question about this. It's been a medicinal plant with human beings ever since we've discovered it. So period, end of story, that's what it is. So one of these things that we're seeing is now Pennsylvania is talking about medical marijuana. And you see, to me, this is symbolic. Because we're almost to the point to where we're completely cracked in half in terms of a country that has, you know, from sea to shining sea. We need a couple more here in the middle of this, you know, country. We've got Minnesota and a couple more. Boom, we'll have a nice crack through that line and we'll end this stupid hypocrisy as well. But the thing is you always got to consider is if we're going to sit here and end hypocrisy like that, this is why it's symbolic to me, then, of course, naturally, if we're going to go into a country and nation build, we're going in there with shovels. We're going in there with solar panels, which, beautiful article on the homepage. And I knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. And we haven't even seen the very tip of it yet. Because remember those technologies you talked about? You brought up the nano layer, and I brought up the black silicone. Remember all that?
Yes, indeed.
Well, solar panels, as they sit now, are 50% cheaper than they were at the start of 2008. That's now. Right now. No, not now. Right now. And if these things start producing, this is where we're going to have to go with the job. And this is another reason why I have to go on this tangent. What jobs? You know what jobs we need? We need to secure our energy infrastructure. You don't want to believe in global warming? Fine. Don't believe in it. Whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Do you want to pay $1,000 a kilowatt hour because the president decides to deregulate something that, you know, and so the company figures, oh, they got you by the short and curly, so they're going to charge the state $1,000 a kilowatt hour? You think the state's going to pass that on to grandma? No, of course not. So they're going to cover it, and they're going to suck it up, and they're going to get their little, next thing you know, they're in billions and billions of dollars of debt. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is now your governor. Yeah. So, you know, and now there are even more billions of dollars in debt. You know, these are things, you know, you want to talk about messing around in the Arab world. My goodness gracious. You know this, Bob. The amount of sunlight that hits the planet for 1 minute, just the surface land mass, is
sure
enough to meet the entire needs of humanity for 1 year. That is a massive amount of energy. We are swimming in energy. But we got to go and stick our noses in these places that have... You know, man, maybe they don't like us inherently. What have you? Whatever it is, I don't even want to get into that aspect of it. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm sure they wouldn't care of us if we didn't go over there and mess around with them every 10 years or so. All right, you know what I mean? And do their little black operations and overthrow their democratically elected, you know, presidents and so on and so forth. You know, if we were energy free, in a sense, you know, because there's enough energy, we could tap Yellowstone. That geothermal energy doesn't run out, does it? And if that geothermal runs out, we're doomed. You know?
Time to build the spaceship. Time to build the escape pods.
Exactly. Let's go. What's out of here? Because the sun's going to go out. When's that going to go out? Well, we don't got to worry about it. These are things like, you know, in a sense, and you know me and my Star Trek. I'm a dork. You know, I like my Star Trek universe and all that stuff. And I haven't taught my kids Klingon because I don't know Klingon. But, you know, at the same time, when we're sitting here looking at a future like that, which science fiction... You know, people, come on now. Science fiction always paves the future. That's our golden brick road of, you know, through the collective consciousness of people. So if we're going to sit here and look at what started, what did they do? Right? Money's gone, right? Everybody has for anything that they want. Why? Because the Earth has these resources available to us. We can't have this stuff privatized, and you know as well as I do. We've talked about this economic system. This economic system is doomed.
Why do you think I got a big howling case of the creeps when President Obama came out of his the jobs summit today and said that it was going to be the province of the private sector to, you know, to get out there and create them jobs? I can smell a nasty screaming howl for tax cuts for miles now.
They can scream all they want, but what we really need, and I hope this is what he's smart enough to realize, and this is what pops into my mind, because I'm out here in rural Wisconsin. Okay, our big corporations are gone. They're done. They're done. I mean, we have empty warehouses out here. Private sector, when I hear that now, see, I think what we're getting to a point is we already know that without a shadow of a doubt, the unemployment rate is not 10%. It's not 12%.
No, it's like 20.
It's much, much, it's 17, 18 range. Okay? Well, how can you say that, Albert? Because for the entire time that I've been talking to you on the horn, I haven't had a job other than raising my kids. That's how I can tell you that.
I had an email the other day from one of our regulars who said, you know, today is a very grim anniversary for me. 2 years. 2 years. No job after a 20-year career.
Hmm.
And, you know, nowhere near retirement.
No. My kids are almost six. My kids are almost six. Do you think I count? I don't count. And I know for a fact I'm not alone. I have friends that have done the same exact thing. We sat there, we looked at what we had, we looked at what we needed, we sat there and we said, you know what, if we're going to do what we're going to do, then we have to do what we have to get done. And what's one of the things I was missing in our lives? A father. What was one of the things that we would have liked to see more of? Right? A father. Or a parent, a stable structure. So that's what we're doing. We're taking our priorities, and that's what I'm also trying to say, is that our priorities are going to wind up start shifting. Okay, we're going to have to start taking some more traditional-type values that are very important that shouldn't be lost, that, you know, children do need a family to grow up in, right? I'm totally, right? And you can only afford what you can afford to have to raise these children. You know, if we're going to sit here and look at jobs and private sector nonsense, well, when we're sitting here looking at unemployment like this, like, and this is the other thing, I don't need a job. Technically, I'm not going to go work at a job just so I can pay for child support, number one. That's why would I do that? I can spend time with my kids, or I can send them to, you know, learn all these horrible habits and have some lady sitting in front of a TV all day. I don't think so. I'm teaching my kids. They understand the equator. They understand who the president is and what city they live in and all those other things, and they can almost find them on a map, okay? So, you know, they know we're north of the equator, and that makes me proud that they even understand what that is. You know, they were asking me why it was all cold today, so I was explaining thermodynamics and all that other stuff is, you know, as dumbed down as I can make it. But, you know, if we went out there and asked my kids, well, why is it cold? And they say it was an absence of heat, right? And that's just right there and then for a 5-6-year-old, that's enough for me. You know what I mean? So I sit there and I look at this, back to this private sector issue. There's people like me out here that right now are doing things that inspire them. I have no desire to go, hello?
I'm here. Hello? Oh, no. I think Albert? I think Albert's phone has done its... Maybe we'll hear back from Albert. I know exactly what he's talking about. And I understand completely. And my problem is that some of these things that have to happen, it almost seems as if it is impossible that they can happen for so long as we're busy playing junior empire. If you know what I mean. Maybe this is Albert ringing back in. Maybe it was different phone time. Let's just see here in a second. Is that you, Albert?
Yes, Brother Bob. I'm sorry about that. I was starting to get on a tangent here. I don't know what the last thing I rambled out was, but really just quickly, the whole point is that I was getting at was, you know, like, I'm not going to work to pay for my child just to go to some daycare and sit in front of a TV all day long.
Right. Well, you know, we have that discussion around here, too, because we're very rural.
Mm-hmm.
And, frankly, some minimum wage job, you're going to be working to work.
Yep, pretty much.
You know, the whole paycheck goes to
something.
The whole paycheck pays for gasoline or you know,
yep.
Our kids are a little bit older than yours, but... We have been engaged in that calculus, and frankly, you know, when I look at what we've got to deal with in our real so-called real world,
mm-hmm.
sometimes Albert, I look at Agnes and I go, "How's this sound, honey? Welcome to Walmart."
Mm-hmm.
She goes, "Oh no."
Company store right there. That is the company store.
Sure it is, and it's also the only place around here I would have even so much as a prayer of getting a job. And you know what? I probably wouldn't, because I would be deemed overqualified. I'd have to.
Not only are you,
I'd have to fill out the application and lie about the college degree and lie about and no, never got anything postgraduate. You know, maybe put high school dropout on it and try to pretend that I'm fairly, you know, that I'm just an autodidact.
But there's no future there. There is no future at Walmart. And the thing is when Obama talks about private sector, he's not going to, there's nothing he could do that could put a wedge between, except for FEMA camps. You know, without FEMA camps, there's nothing Obama can do to put a wedge between me and my children, which inspire me to be a better person, to do everything correctly, to teach them the real ways in terms of just life in general. And here we are spinning on this planet through space. You know, if he cannot offer me, or if he doesn't put proposals that offer me some sort of inspiration, well, I'm not going to budge. If you put out some initiatives that train people to put solar panels up on roofs, because we're going to have a national push to do something like that, sorry, children, we're going to have to go with, you're going to go stay with crazy grandma or something like that. I mean, that's what it'll, I mean, I would actually do that because it would inspire me. That would be something that I know. That even if I was to die doing some windmill 200 feet up and fall down at the last moment of my, the very last moment of my existence, I would be happy to know that we were working on something that's going to leave this planet in a better shape and in better hands, in this country, in a more controllable fashion for my children than was left to me. And I think that in a sense, that should be our basics in terms of what we want out of life, is that we should always want to leave it better for the future. You know, we might not be here, and hey, the Buddhists might be right, and we might come back here. You know, I would kind of like to see some sort of twist of that. I can't wait till George W. Bush is a cockroach in my freaking, my kitchen. Oh, hey.
You've even learned to dead on the Bill Hicks laugh, peace be upon him.
Oh, man. No, seriously, I want to be inspired. That's what I want.
Yeah, you want the. I mean, and we talk about Obama being a great speech maker, but you know what? Not really. Not really. The soaring rhetoric of an FDR or a JFK or an MLK or an RFK, it ain't there. We haven't had soaring rhetoric in a generation.
No. But in a sense, maybe that's what the internet's for. Like, and, you know, honestly, and you know I've been doing these internet wars for a very long time, and it's so much easier now than it was. It's so much easier now. It really is. And it's not just because I go to the easy spots. I'm looking for prey. I'm looking for minds that I can either make an example of.
You're looking for zombies.
I'm zombie hunting one way or the other. Exactly. And I mean, that they're going to see the fallacy, other people will read it and see the fallacy in that type of thinking. You know, I heard an interesting, you know, and this is one thing you might be surprised about me. You know, when I was younger, I was more conservative. I really was. I was a very conservative person. And a couple of my friends also were saying, yeah, when I was young, you know it. Why? Because we're self-centered when we're young. And, you know, it's not everybody, but a lot of us were. But then we did something that separates us from being conservative and not being conservative, and being somebody that goes, liberal, why is that word such a bad word? Well, that's not a bad word. That's a pretty damn good word. I like that word. That describes me way better than con. Ugh. Right? When we sit there and listen to that, one thing that we developed was critical thinking skills. You see? And I believe, maybe that's that word again, but I believe that everybody has these switches in their body. You know, maybe some have less than others, but everybody's got a little bit of the switch. And if you can, you know, I've been, you know, catapulting the propaganda for years, and I'm not alone. There's thousands of us out here doing that because we really do care. And we do want to see inspirations. So maybe that's our job. Maybe it's not Barack Obama's job to do that. What Barack Obama's job is to listen to us. That's his job. And I know we're not quite there yet, and I hope he's at least halfway kind of conscious of realizing that, but that's the first politician in a very long time that even remotely listens to us or even remotely addresses our grievances. I mean, come on. I mean, what? Bill Clinton didn't listen to his base either, people. He didn't listen to the left wing. That's why Ralph Nader got such a big vote in the Gore election, because he didn't listen to us. and they didn't sit there and do these things that we felt, you know, they sat home and not voted. And that's a scary thing what Obama's doing is we
We haven't talked in a while, and I don't know, maybe you weren't even listening the other night, the darkness being what darkness is. But, you know, there's that Daily Coast poll that came out a couple of days ago that just makes my blood run cold on the one hand, and on the other I go, yeah, well, and why would they? That says that at present 40% of the Democratic the Democratic vote says they're going to take a powder.
Yep.
Absolutely. And
that
and
is scary.
It's terrifying because
it shouldn't scare you and me.
No, it's terrifying to the Democratic power elite. But you know what? If we think it's frustrating now, oh rats. If we think it's frustrating now, with the glacial pace of reform and so-called change, wait till you see Barack Obama trying to operate Bill Clinton style with a hostile Congress, stopping everything for impeachment proceedings on whether or not he's actually Barry Sotoro. Oh, just wait for that. That's going to be a real, real merry-go-round ride in the funhouse. Let's roll along here. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Okay, you're going to have to turn your speakers down. Hello? That's hello?
Yeah, hey, Bob, can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
All right. Hold on a minute here. There you are.
Yeah, here I am.
I had the devil of a time getting through to you on my dime, so I had to call you on your dime.
No, that's fine. I kept trying to take the call. You know, I just have this string of blinking lights, and I kept punching the button, and it kept going away.
There is something strange going on with the phones. I'm glad you're in that.
Were you getting? Tell me this. At any point, did you get a fast busy? We'll do some quick tech support.
I got some really weird background music. And a couple other times, it just hung up. It wouldn't the call wouldn't come.
Okay, I got to call CityNet. Need to know that.
But
thanks for Furbo. Yeah.
I never heard you. I never heard Albert. I never. But you know, this is just. You know what's happening, and so do I. So let's just keep it under our hats.
Yeah, let's.
It's those satellites. But you were talking about. What were you talking about? Now I'm all confused. Here we could just go here. Today is a December 3rd, and it's a bit of an anniversary that I had completely forgotten about.
I had not. If we're talking about the same anniversary,
25 years ago today, something happened.
Yes, it did.
Something hideous.
Nothing that really, something horrendous. Something that was the worst thing like it to happen since they dug the Hawk's Nest Tunnel here about 5 miles from me. Because up until what happened 25 years ago today, the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster was the single worst industrial disaster that ever happened on the planet that we're aware of.
Did this disaster... The Hawk's Nest disaster, was there any kind of accountability for it? Did it get kind of cleaned up?
Not only was there no accountability for it, it was perpetrated by the same company, Reverbo. Gauley Bridge, West Virginia, was known as the town of the living dead. We learned a new word out of it called occupational pneumoconiosis. That's where you breathe the crap that kills your, that turns your lungs into concrete, and you die while it happens. No, there was no accountability, and in fact, in about 1941, a man attempted to write a novelized version about it that was about to be released to great fanfare, and the company lawyers got hold of the publisher and said, "You let this out, and we'll make your life a living hell." And it never came out. And now the Hawk's Nest tunnel disaster that used to be marked by a historic marker right on the side of the road where everybody could see it,
yeah,
is now relegated to a side path down a trail that you have to park and walk to go and see. We are talking about Union Carbide, of course.
Of course. And, you know, how do you like that? They were involved in the same disaster I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, and let's see. In the one I'm talking about, of course, the one I'm talking about involved a bunch of people who weren't white. Who lived
or not even American.
Nah, they lived really far away, and they were just mostly just, you know, scum. They didn't.
Right, but 3,500 of them did die instantly.
Instantly. Sometimes some people say 4,000 instantly died as soon as they breathed.
And it's, yeah, breathed the Union Carbide poison.
Uh-huh, and then, of course, the death toll now.
And 20,000 and more have died since.
With, yeah, recurring birth defects and just awful things. And you know how come? Because nobody cleaned it up. No, a couple of guys in suits showed up in court one day and wrote a check and then left. But they didn't clean it up.
No, they didn't. We are, of course, talking. Let's go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. We're talking about Bhopal. And Bhopal happened on December the 3rd, 1984, and to this day, no one has been held accountable for it.
The Dow Chemical skate, their reason is where it works for me. It's sort of like they bought Union Carbide. They bought the company, but they conveniently decided not to buy the mess the company made.
Right.
I didn't know you could do that. So it's sort of like I buy a boat that has full of holes.
But you don't buy the holes.
No, but instead of fixing the holes, in addition to that, I arrange to give people, like, rides around the bay in the boat full of holes, and the boat sinks and they die. Something like that.
Yes. And then when they sue you, Reverbo says, I didn't buy the holes in that boat. It's not my fault you drowned.
Oh, here's what I say. I'll say what Union Carbide said. I'm reading it right off of the net. They said the accident was an act of sabotage by a disgruntled employee who was never identified and not the result of lax safety standards that those activists had always claimed. Somehow or other, that allows you to just get out of the hole.
Well, see, that's what you have to that's what you have to say in India, because here it's a monotheistic culture and there it's polytheistic, and here you can send out your dark-suited conscienceless lawyers who say act of God, because we're used to act of God here in Appalachia, Reverbo, believe me, we are.
Yeah.
But if you try that in India, they look at you and say, which one? We will find him. So they have to blame it on a saboteur. You know, a Frenchman with a wooden shoe who throws his wooden shoe, his sabot, into the machinery.
Okay. Now explain to me how that relieves you of your liability. Who gives a damn what the reason was?
Well, it really doesn't, especially where one is dealing with, what are the magic words here in West Virginia? Ultra-hazardous, inherently dangerous materials. You want the punchline to this joke, though?
Uh-huh.
I know that they blamed the unknown saboteur who was never caught in India. But how, then, do you explain the fact that the last... Now, you can't make methyl isocyanate in India anymore.
Well, you're good.
There's a reason, Reverbo. The site of that Union Carbide plant has never been cleaned up, as you note. It is a toxic waste dump. Every bit of ground is absolutely chock-a-block with toxic waste. Mercury, lead, nickel, other funsies are there, and the secretions are into the water table, and they are polluting water for countless miles around. So you can't make methyl isocyanate in India anymore. Lucky for India, there are hillbillies.
Yeah.
because they make it 50 miles from me. They still make it. Now, granted, it went from being Union Carbide to being, oh, God, what was the name of the plant or the name of the company? But it's not that anymore either. Now it's Bayer Crop Sciences.
Well, that sounds kind of harmless. That sounds okay.
That's an aspirin factory. At Institute, West Virginia, sitting right next door to the state's historically African-American institution of higher learning, West Virginia State. The white bread private college in West Virginia sits next to the Capitol. The historically black college sits next to Bhopal.
Might as well be.
And here, wait. Here's the fun part. Here's the cherry on top of the cowgirl, as Tom Robbins once said. A year ago this past August, the Bayer Crop Sciences plant caught fire. And a couple of people died. When Kanawha County, which is the county in which the plant sits, when Kanawha County Emergency Services, you know, the 911 guys, the guys who control the, hey, get over there, the first responders, when they called the plant says, well, what's going on? We hear there's a fire. The guy on the other end of the line at the plant says, I have not been cleared to tell you anything by corporate. The fire was within minutes of reaching the methyl isocyanate compound.
Oh, boy.
And no one would have had a chance.
Well, I guess it's like nerve gas or something.
It makes nerve gas look like a walk in the park.
It's nice to know that as the flames are getting close to the nerve gas tanks, that corporate is still deciding how to spin it.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to run it. Look, you got your guy there at the phone, and you got your guys in the spokescreep department, and you got legal, and you've got shareholder relations. Now, how are they supposed to get all that information and have a meeting and make a determination all within the time that it takes to tell 15 or 20,000 people how not to die?
And they can't hear anything with all those EMT guys and all those fire engines pounding on the door. They would just shut up for a minute so we could have a meeting.
There you go.
So, okay, this is good. So we have just had a nice example covering the industrial component of the military industrial machine.
Yeah, that is true.
Now we can head over and cover the military component.
Oh, wait. Before we go away, can I tell you the other funny part?
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious so far.
Yeah, this part's a real knee slapper. The part of the plant, the part of the Bayer plant that did burn was the part of the plant where they make all the stuff that kills off all the honeybees that contributes to beehive collapse syndrome.
It does get funnier.
No, I'm sorry, you were saying?
No, in a different universe, you and I are clearly on the wrong side. I mean, there's good reasons why we are getting nowhere, and...
David in Tennessee notes that, 4,000 died then, another 20,000 followed them in Bhopal, and then for those that lived, they made babies with no eyes, open spines, and brains with the function of an oyster, if that.
Well, it's not my fault. It was a lone nut. Actually, that is what the disgruntled employee is. It's the lone nut theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not our fault.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be a gunman just as long as he's alone.
Yeah. It's sort of like, again, it's the mom test. I mean, would your mom appreciate that? Well, then stop doing it, say you're sorry, and put it back the way you found it. Whatever happened to customer service?
The customer is always wrong.
Well, they're you know, we got two sets of laws, but we're going to get to that in a minute. Well, real quick, I mean, it's easily discussing the military component is a cinch. I think something came up this week about that. Oh, yes. Let's look on the map here. Afghanistan. What is the point? One question I ended up with about the whole thing. What is the point of this? What's the point?
And you know, I mentioned that David Sirota column, and I don't want to go into a big read, but it's kind of hard not to take his questions. He sets up three possibilities for going come big or don't come at all. So for going bigger in Afghanistan, David Sirota sets up three possibilities. One, President Obama believes we can conduct the kind of counterinsurgency he says we need with 1/6 of the troop levels his counterinsurgency experts say are necessary, because that's the big secret. They said they need 600,000 to completely wipe out the insurgency. Two, President Obama is escalating the war with no intention of halting an escalation, but instead an intention of continuing to escalate to much higher troop levels, irrespective of his vague promise to try to bring home troops in 2011. Or, three, President Obama is risking the lives of 100,000 troops in order to prevent being labeled weak, but with no intention of actually waging the counterinsurgency strategy he publicly says is necessary. And what David Sirota says is, I'm going to discount one and two. So that leaves you with some sort of Jedi mind trick.
Oh, God. That just leaves you with just the that's just what you didn't want to hear.
That just leaves you with body bags.
Yeah, and it just leaves you with another president who just doesn't get it. Just is totally squandering his time there. I don't know. See, I think he is an eloquent man, and I think he is an intelligent man, and actually, I think there is time. It's running out. Running out, but there is time for him to lay down the law if he decides to. It doesn't look like he's headed that way, but he is the boss. I mean, I still think there's time for him to tell people how it's going to be, and if they don't do it that way, well, you pick up two chests. I'm really, you know, grasping at straws here, but there probably is a little time for that. Hey, Congress may do what they never do with the Republicans, right? They may say, you don't get your war.
That is a very real possibility, although, you know, you have to start out with the assumption that Congress being servile, Congress will appropriate the money. But, you know, Dennis pointed out very, very appropriately and very, very intelligently that back in October, they already passed a humongous supplemental for Iraq and Afghanistan, or a humongous budget for it. And he said, but I'm sure we'll be asked for a supplemental now. But, you know, the fact of the matter is there is a little bit of a chance, because Democratic Congresses are generally very much better at pushing back against Democratic presidents than they are pushing back at Republican presidents, because Republican presidents don't hesitate, Reverbo, to go out onto the, onto the bully pulpit and say, that Democratic Congress is a bunch of communists, knee-jerk, sissy, pinko, you know, pick one, and they don't understand, they don't love America like I do.
They don't support our troops.
And Barack Obama cannot go to war with a Democratic Congress the way a Republican can.
Oh, they're going to get it. It's just going to be, it's going to just go from bad to worse to a joke. They'll figure out a way to make it work. I guess I kind of tend to agree with Sirota. I wish I didn't, but.
Well, you know, I wish it had been 2010 instead of 2011. If he said, we're going to surge up and see what happens, and if I don't see results pretty, PDQ, we're unsurging. Sorry, no, it's going to be there till 2011, because it turns out that the electoral calculus that was used was his reelection and not that of the sitting Congress.
Indeed. And anyway, don't you think it's absurd that these people won't? You know, what date are we leaving? How do you even, whether you're pro-war or anti-war, how do you even begin to speculate on what that day would be? And I just, the whole thing's just absurd to me. We've been doing this. We've been going at this. Let's see, 2003. I can do the math on this. It's coming up on 7 years. 7 years we've been chasing a bunch, really just a few, stateless, if I can quote from my own emails, stateless religious gangsters. We've been chasing them around with battle wagons for 7 years. What has it gotten us? What are the results here?
But, you know, that's the funny thing. I agree with you in general principle, but we now know from the Tora Bora report, we kind of knew years ago, didn't we? But we now know from the Tora Bora report that we really weren't chasing. We chased until we hollered, "You're it!" And then we didn't chase so much. I mean, yeah. According to that report, Osama bin Laden sat down and wrote his will because he realized that if he was fighting us the way we're fighting him, he would go in and he would keep going until he was dead. But then again, you know, if he gets caught or killed, then the plans for going into Iraq all go swirly down the toilet.
Not exactly. Just the plan that they told you about. Not the real plan. See, now we're going to get to it here. Because if you want to sit down, if they want to one day sit down and talk to you and I about why we really go to war, and what the hell we're really doing over there in the Middle East, I think you and I and the ghost of General Smedley Butler would be glad to sit down and listen to this story.
Indeed.
But don't talk to me about chasing, if he indeed is a circus freak, a 6'5", portable dialysis machine.
Portable dialysis. Don't forget the portable dialysis machine.
I can barely even process this. But I mean,
And the video studio in a bag.
You can't, I don't even understand where this whole Afghanistan, piling on Afghanistan, the report, the 9/11 report, by your own government and mine, they said the thing was hatched in Spain, in Germany, and in the U.S., and it was mostly financed by Saudis. No doubt with last names of people with the Bush family, has investments with. So the whole thing with Afghanistan was that he holed up there, right? He escaped there, or he and the gang kind of, that was sort of their base or something. They kind of skedaddled over there. The Afghanistan never was involved in 9/11, were they? Was it?
No, because see, that's the thing that keeps hanging in my craw. All this talk about how the Taliban, if they get back, because I saw this clip of, you know, and God bless him for even making the attempt. I saw this clip of Congressman Kucinich appearing, of all places, on O'Reilly, where O'Reilly made the reference. Now, you know, all you lefties, and you're a lefty, Congressman. I mean, come on, we all know it. That was part of it. I know. But where, you know, Kucinich tried to explain to him some of, you know, what you're talking about. And just right over his head, like thrown falafel.
It seems like that, like Afghanistan, everybody was itching for a fight. Everybody, and we should be. I mean, it was horrible. And everybody wanted, okay, let's go do some shooting. And somehow Afghanistan, I'm trying to remember all this. Afghanistan seemed to be the appropriate place. It was like no one could argue with that. Even Obama was all for going after Afghanistan. That's where we should be, man, Afghanistan. That's the place to be. That's the place we avenge 9/11, man. And I keep thinking, what?
Well, yeah, and the precise, and you know, the O'Reilly kept equating Taliban with Al-Qaeda.
So they're not, well, then he's an idiot.
But see, so many of us don't, and I kind of mentioned this a couple of nights ago, so many of us, Reverbo, don't remember the lead up to the first bombings of Afghanistan. There was a back and forth. There were offers and counteroffers. And the first offer was made by none other than the Taliban, who said to us, listen, we're not in love with the guy. We can't get rid of him. He's got more guns than we've got. but we'll find a way to take him and turn him over to authorities in The Hague, where he can be tried in the International Criminal Court for what we think we also think he has done.
Turn that down, as I recall.
Turn that down. You are correct, sir.
Well, excuse me. Well, just like we, here he is. He's behind that tree. Shall we shoot him? Donald Rumsfeld, no, let him go.
You know, so just to be clear, it's, you know, Tora Bora was not the first time that bin Laden was let go.
The Taliban and Al-Qaeda are not the best of friends either.
No, and let's back up again. Let's back up to May of 2001. When the Taliban, the same guys, were given $45 million by the Bush administration in recognition, I mean, you can almost hear the certificate being read at the State Department, right? In recognition of your heroic efforts to eradicate opium poppy production in your country. I mean, this is reality.
We cut them a check for $45 million as to say thank you for doing that?
We really, really did, Reverbo.
Wow, it is a wiggly world, isn't it?
Yeah, the positively squirmy.
God. Well, I mean, we gave, you know, what's his name? What was the guy? Instead of getting bin Laden, we ended up finding what's his face in a little spider hole and hanging him. What was his name again?
Oh, yeah, I know. Brutal dictator gasses his own people.
I remember him. I mean, we sell everybody the guns and we sell everybody the rope to hang.
But see, there's also another common thread that runs through this, Reverbo, and that is if you do business with the Bushes, they will eventually double-cross you. Do you remember Manuel Noriega?
Indeed.
Happily being the middleman for CIA cocaine-running expeditions all through the Reagan administration, while the CIA bought cocaine. You know, it's all straight out of Catch-22. It's all Milo Minderbinder. He's buying eggs in Malta for 5 cents and selling them in Pianosa for 3 cents, and everybody makes a profit.
Here, taste this. I just saw that again about 2 weeks ago, and of course it's not as good as the book, but it's still wonderful. And he hands his Sarian this thing. It looks like a little chocolate. Piece of chocolate candy. You taste this. He puts it in his mouth. And he starts.
What is this?
And he's so awful. He says, "What is this?" He's
chocolate covered cotton.
Yeah, it's cotton.
How did I know that the world market for cotton was going to drop out?
I thought I could get the boys to like eat it for me. Oh God!
Because he could get a government contract with Cost Plus. Oh, I know. But if you recall, the CIA, you know, Manuel Noriega was middlemanning the cocaine that the CIA was buying and then selling to turn around and finance the terrorists operating in El Salvador and Nicaragua.
That's all they had to pay for it with.
And then once that deal basically fell through, you remember Eugene Hassenfuss? How can you forget a name like Eugene Hassenfuss?
And did he was in that plane. He was down there.
Yes, in Costa Rica.
Yeah, he was down there.
Airstrip, plane crash, everything comes apart. Well, as soon as that whole deal went through, Manuel Noriega, who had a shitload of Bush money, became no longer useful, and the money was still useful and needed to come home. Do you remember it about this time of year during the George H.W. Bush administration? We had a little war against Panama?
Very little, but yeah, I kind of do.
And then eventually Noriega winds up in a show trial in Miami.
He does.
Where, and you know, anybody who's afraid that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed will walk needs to go back and read the transcripts of the Manuel Noriega trial. We didn't seem to have any problem trying him.
No, we're not going to shed any tears for him, but we didn't have to do that.
But it's what happens when you do business with the Bushes. Let's come forward on the timeline some. We've all seen that photograph of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, having just sold him some poison gas weapons, and Donald Rumsfeld grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush.
Everybody's seen it. Oh, it's a disgrace, but it's no surprise.
And Saddam Hussein was our man in Baghdad because he was willing to bomb the Iranians, whom we had a hard-on for because they decided they didn't like us after we overturned their government. I know it gets a little complicated.
It does.
So there's Saddam's, and he winds up dead. And so we got Noriega in prison. We got Saddam dead. Now, meanwhile, also during the Reagan 80s, during which George H.W. Bush, former head of the CIA, was taking an active role in being the vice president, everybody wonders where the idea of Dick Cheney running the show came from. Need we say more? Well, during the Reagan 80s, there was this little dust-up where the Soviets invaded Afghanistan.
Real quick, those two go all the way back to the Gerald Ford administration.
Absolutely.
I'm interrupting you.
No. So the Bushes get in, you know, via Poppy, get in a little business deal through the CIA with a guy named Osama bin Laden, who has set up what started out to be a sort of USO/VA operation for wounded Afghan resistance fighter vets. And he calls it in Arabic the base. Al-Qaeda. And we funnel tons of money to him. Rocket launchers and grenade launchers and meals ready to eat and bandages and more guns and more bullets. And he's our boy. And he loves doing business with us. And the Bushes, you know, they knew the bin Ladens. You could do business with the bin Ladens because they've been doing business with the bin Ladens exactly at that moment in time. Because bin Laden money, his dad, Osama's daddy, and granted, Osama's got like 112 brothers. I mean, it's one of those deals.
Yeah.
Osama's daddy was in the construction business in Saudi Arabia. And so he's got a little money he's not doing anything with. He's got some of that Jed Clampett walking around money. And he, George H.W. picks up the phone and says, Mr. bin Laden, I got a son, and he's trying to get something going. He wants to go into the oil business like his old man. Think you could stake him a little?
Here we go.
And so Mr. bin Laden says, oh, yes, it would be my pleasure. You're a great family friend, Mr. Bush.
I said it. You like that, too.
Just like it. and so they stake George to something called Arbusto Energy. And George W. Bush becomes the first human being in human recorded history to look for oil in the Texas Permian Basin and not find any.
Yeah. To two bells for that one. Well, if anybody could not find oil down there, it would be him.
And meanwhile, this thing is going down over in South Asia where they have just found out that while George can't find oil in the Permian Basin, somebody else has found a boatload of it in the Caspian Basin. And there's just this one problem. Logistics. How to get at it. And in the meantime, backing up just a hair, I'm sorry, am I boring you?
No, I'm over at the big board looking at the Caspian Sea.
Okay. Oh, that... Don't put it on the internet. Everybody will see the big board. You don't want that. You don't want to see the big board.
I don't want everybody to see that, but I...
Okay, but we got to back up just a hair because in the meantime, George H.W.'s little business dealings begin to spiral out of control a little bit because on the one hand, he's taken care of, you know, Dead Man Tell No Tales. He's more or less taken care of Manuel Noriega, who is... you know, somewhere in a federal supermax, in a lockdown isolation cell with a purple crayon between his toes, screaming his fool head off about, I was sold, right? So now we've got a problem with Saddam Hussein, who has passed his usefulness because the Iran-Iraq war is over, and he's got this massive military.
Who won that war, by the way?
Really nobody. It's kind of funny with wars that way.
It sort of just went away.
You know, granted, a couple of entire generations of both nations dropped dead.
Yeah, and there was a little poison gas unpleasantness. And,
right, there was poison gas unpleasantness that Saddam shot at them. But one of the tricky things about using poison gas weapons is that they are subject to something called the wind.
They are.
And it blew back on Saddam, and it wiped out some of his own villages. And George H.W. Bush said, aha. And then, because he was getting screwed out of his oil, Iraq, which didn't have full development of all because of the Iraq war, and you know the first thing you do is you bomb each other's terminals.
Sure.
He wants to further develop his oil reserves, which are massive, and then he finds out that those little piss ants, the Kuwaitis, are drilling him on the slant. In other words, little bitty Kuwait is there, but they're not drilling straight down into the Kuwaiti sand. They're drilling at a 45-degree angle into the Iraqi reserves.
Oh, those clever boys.
Yeah, because it's not like you can see that from the sand.
No.
So Saddam Hussein has a big military that's sitting around not doing anything, and he decides he's going to go and take care of this little problem. But remember, he is George H.W. Bush's man in Baghdad. So he does what any good mafia lieutenant does. He asks the capo first. And in this case, George H.W. Bush is the capo di tutti capo. And so he sends a message to Washington, or actually he sends it to our ambassador, a woman by the name of April Glaspie. And he says, you know, I just found this out, and I'm real pissed off, and I'm going to go and take my stuff back. And if they don't straighten up, I'm going all the way in. And George H.W. Bush and that administration has given pre-existing orders to April Glaspie. I know this sounds like paranoia, but it's all real. It's all verifiable.
No, this is priceless. This explains everything.
And so April Glaspie sends a telex back to our man in Baghdad that says the United States takes no position on Arab-Arab conflicts, which then our dutiful lieutenant, our mafia lieutenant in Baghdad, reads as being, okay, I'm a lieutenant, the Kuwaiti's a lieutenant, I can whack him. Because that's what George H.W. Bush wanted him to do. So you get the big build-up so that George H.W. Bush can maybe at least teach Saddam a lesson. But it gets a little bit out of hand because all of a sudden his pals, the Saudis, remember Mr. Bin Laden?
Mm-hmm.
Who loaned the dim sun the money? Well, they get a little antsy because here comes this big-ass army that they ain't got nothing to march against. And they holler to their business partner, who's also the business partner of Saddam, but, you know. And George H.W. Bush says, this shall not stand. And the next thing you know, you've got the entire United States Army and Air Force and Marine Corps sitting in holy Saudi Arabia, which has real religious strictures about infidels on their sacred sand. And once the problem is gone, we're not.
We're not. And one of those 110 sons of old man bin Laden objects to it.
Right. And he's been hanging out in the hills and hollers of Afghanistan so long that he's talking to himself. And he's gone native.
Oh, yeah. It's hard in darkness time for him.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, the horror, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. Great call.
Yeah.
Perfect reference.
He's gone.
So
he's completely unpredictable and dangerous, and he's got a whole bunch of crazy people at his disposal.
Yeah, Bin Laden is Arabic for Kurds, okay?
There you go.
And so we're not gone from Saudi Arabia, and this is a burr under his saddle that he, it's an itch he can't scratch. And it just, it's driving him batshit. So we're still there, and he starts issuing, you know, what the demands about us getting out of Saudi Arabia. But we don't get out. And by now, Poppy Bush is gone. But the business interests aren't. And it becomes apparent that our lieutenant in Afghanistan has gone rogue. Meanwhile, let's backtrack to the big board and the Caspian Sea Basin.
Who's our lieutenant in Afghanistan?
Bin Laden.
Oh, that's where he's hanging out. I see. Oh, okay, right. You, excuse me if I'm, every now and then I'm going to get lost. Okay, that's...
Well, it's easy. I'm hanging on to a very tenuous thread here.
And the great thing about all this is that the word that has been used the least in all of this is the word Afghanistan.
Yes.
Which will lead us to.
But we're about to.
Yeah.
Because if you have your big board handy...
Right here.
You will notice that the problem, as I said, with the Caspian Sea Basin is one of logistics.
It's tough to get to.
Yeah. And it's got some perennially cranky Russians very near it.
Oh, man. It's just surrounded by living hell where it is.
Meanwhile, one of the guys who actually reads books, I don't know which one he was, Wolfowitz, Pearl, pick one, goes back and finds out about something called the Great Game, which is what the Russians and the British called their little constant pinching and poking at one another throughout the 19th century over that particular region, in which each tried to make sure that the other had no hegemonic control over that region. And they think, you know, we could use this to our advantage. Meanwhile, you ever seen a movie called Local Hero, Reverbo?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, it stars, it's wonderful. It's a delightful little comedy for a light evening. But it stars Peter Riegert from Animal House fame. Remember Pinto?
Yes.
Was he Pinto?
Yes.
Yeah. And Peter Riegert works for a big oil company in acquisitions. And they get ready to send him to Scotland, and he's protesting all the way. And he says, you know, I'm really more of a telex man. But they send him anyway. Well, meanwhile, as this Caspian Sea Basin thing develops, there's a telex man at Unocal. And his name is Hamid Karzai. And they say, you know, we got a bad government over here in Afghanistan. You know, I think, you know, you might. No, I'm really more of a telex man. My Pashtun is no good. But he's in the wings. So, you know, here we are. And we've got this logistic problem in the Caspian Sea Basin. And we've still got the American military on the sacred Saudi sand. And Osama bin Laden gets so batshit crazy. Maybe it's before he gets his dialysis machine. You know, kidney problems can make you a little loopy.
Well, and of course we haven't even... No point in mentioning he's also a religious fanatic.
And he's getting more fanatic by the day because, I mean, you know, the TV reception in a cave in Afghanistan sucks for air, and you've got nothing left but the Quran to read. And after a while, you start talking to God, and a little while later, Allah starts talking back. It happens. Ask St. John the Divine about, you know, life on the Isle of Patmos and go read Revelations, you know. It just does. So... we're still there, and so Osama bin Laden, the lieutenant gone rogue, Colonel Kurtz in Afghanistan, starts sending little love notes to the United States about getting out of the sacred Saudi sand, one of which was a Zodiac inflatable boat attack on a damn near billion-dollar American warship that blows a giant gaping hole in its side while parked in, what, Yemen? At which point in time, some of the old, remember, we're dealing with the American so-called intelligence apparatus, which has deep connections to, you know, the family, you know, the Bush family. And they start whispering in Bill Clinton's ear, there's this terror network run by this guy named Bin Laden, and he calls it Al-Qaeda. And they done it. But Bill Clinton doesn't rise to the bait. And you get the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and Bill Clinton again doesn't rise to the bait. And there's the Millennium threat and the attempt to bomb LAX, and he keeps not rising to the bait, and we can't get a war. Because what we got to have is a war, because the Bush business partner is still Colonel Kurtzing over here in Afghanistan. And we are making no progress at all on opening that Caspian Sea Basin line. Because they figured out by now that the line can come out of the Caspian Sea Basin through a couple of hateful little Istan countries and come down across Afghanistan and to Pakistan and thereby to the sea, where they'll build a terminal and it'll be Frisbees and wheat checks for everybody.
I'm vaguely remembering this pipeline business. Boy, that's a hell of a job.
So now loop back around to September 11th, 2001. It's happened. The towers are down. The Pentagon is smoking. There's a crater in western Pennsylvania, and people are coming unglued. And that is when the Taliban, who have recently been the recipients of a laurel and hearty handshake, along with $45 million U.S. American dollars, gets called back. Guys, we want to build a pipeline through Afghanistan for Caspian Sea oil. Now here, and see, there was no negotiation. Here's how it works. You give us the pipeline rights, and we give you a carpet of gold. Or you don't, and we give you a carpet of bombs. You pick.
Who now was Al-Qaeda took?
This is it's the George W. Bush administration who makes that statement.
Right. Al-Qaeda was Bin Laden is Al-Qaeda. Bin Laden is not the Taliban, correct?
No. No, they're not. But the Taliban's hold is so tenuous on Afghanistan that they're really in no position to stop Al-Qaeda if they want to set up training camps. You know, they had set them up in Sudan, but the Sudan ran them out, and we bombed them, and blah, 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 blah. While the Republicans over here were saying that Bill Clinton was ineffectual and not avenging the deaths of the USS Cole.
So we're trying to get the Taliban to help us secure Afghanistan and to evidently try to give up Bin Laden at the same time. And this is all.
Yeah, we'd like to get Bin Laden out of the way.
Right.
But because, you know, I don't think the George W. Bush administration ever imagined that he would have been capable of what happened on September 11th. You know, there's all this other weird stuff out there about, Condoleezza Rice saying we never imagined that they would use planes as missiles. And, you know, the whole August 6th, 2001 presidential daily briefing that, you know, George W. Bush used to wipe his bottom with at Crawford.
Right. They did have war. Plenty of warning, I think.
Yeah, they had plenty of warning, but they had no idea that he was of the scope of which he was capable. So that happens, but then after that happens, he delivers another ultimatum, because the same ultimatum comes after every attack, Reverbo. And that is, get your sorry infidel asses off of our sacred sand now. And after September 11, 2001, George W. Bush got our troops out of Saudi Arabia.
How about that?
And no more Bin Laden problems since.
No. we've had a few interesting, we've been ramping up those terror alerts, you know, at appropriate political moments, but in fact, we haven't had any problems. Of course, there have been problems in Spain, there have been problems around the, there have been some problems, but none here.
Oh, and by the way, just for little footnotes along the way on your big board as you're writing with your dry erase marker, you can go back to where we talked about Arbusto Energy, and I'm reminded by David in Tennessee that in Spanish it means bush or shrub.
Clever.
Not a joke. However, and this is where you put one sub A, in Texan it means busted.
Self-fulfilled prophecies for this family.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Marty wants you to write under Afghanistan and Bin Laden and Russia, Charlie Wilson's War.
There you go.
Okay, and I am corrected. Yeah, Tom Hulce was Pinto, and Peter Riegert was Karen Allen's boyfriend, Boone.
Okay.
Okay,
Tom
so
Hulce
it's...
was also Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, exactly. In one of the most incredible casting moves ever.
So anyway, that's you know a nice evening's watching, but all of this rolls around, and we go in under the and by this time you know with Daddy because now the psychology is at play, okay? Now the creepy abnormal psych that you studied when you were like a sophomore in college comes into play. Everybody took abnormal psych because everybody, you know, everybody's like, am I in here? You know.
Yes, you are.
Because we all is.
I'm in chapter 3, I believe.
You know, I keep little post-it flags in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition, just for easy reference. Yeah, it's like Daffy Duck. Lucky for me, I keep my my feathers numbered for just such an occasion.
Right. Yeah, just go read the neurotic style. You'll find yourself in there.
And so what happens is the abnormal psych kicks in. George W. Bush is president now. Saddam Hussein was essentially the first time your mafia lieutenant screws up, you don't take him out and whack him because that makes people not want to be lieutenants. The first time your mafia lieutenant screws up, you chastise him severely if you're a really, really good capo di tutti capo. And that's what happened with the first Gulf War. But now you've got George W. Bush in office, and you've still got Saddam in power in Iraq. And George W. Bush has been harboring this daddy thing.
Yeah, this is where we're heading to, the neurotic, the neurosis.
You know, and this stuff's all documented. The night he came in drunk and he wanted to argue with Poppy, and he said, I'll go mano a mano with you, old man. Right? You know, this is not made up. And you know, just because, and oh, God, we could do a whole show on this. You know, George W. was potty trained at gunpoint.
No, this is great. This that guy is about as Christian as Karl Marx. It had nothing to do with a crusade. It had nothing to do with anything for him. It was all just this neurotic bullshit with his father.
And money. You got to remember that, God, it seems like such ancient freaking history now. Do you remember...
8 years of this.
Do you remember when was it Joe Wilson? Who was like an advisor to the National Security Advisor, and starting in January he started saying, you know, we got a problem with Al Qaeda, because you know we were still on the sacred sand at that point.
Uh-huh.
No, it wasn't. But I had his book and I can't remember it now. And he's trying to get appointments with Condoleezza Rice, and she keeps blowing him off, and then September 11th happens. And he is called in, and I guess this is just sort of a refresher course, because if we're going to talk about why we're in Afghanistan, we have to talk about this, because we have to figure out how we got there in the first place. And so, what's his name, whose name I can't remember, gets called by George Bush on September 11th or maybe September 12th, 2001, and says, go find out why Saddam did this to us. What? Okay, so he goes back, and he comes back on, like, September the 13th and says, Mr. President, Saddam didn't do this. This was bin Laden and al-Qaeda. Look harder. Comes back. Nope, still bin Laden.
Read between the lines.
And then the bombing starts in Afghanistan because, you know, the pipeline rights aren't there yet. And because they've offered up Richard Clark. Thank you, Texas Betsy. That's Richard Clark with an E that was doing all of this.
Mm.
And, you know, they decide to give him the carpet of bombs because at this point in time, the abnormal psych is in full blossom.
Well, every week there was a different rationale for what he was doing, if you recall.
Yeah.
We're going after bin Laden. No, we're bringing democracy to him. No, it's about oil. No, it's none of your business.
And you come forward to the late October speech in Cincinnati. That dim leader gave, and then you got Colin Powell going to the UN saying, my friends, these are not speculations. These are cold, hard facts. When the day before he had looked and said, I will not go to the United Nations and tell these lies.
Well, you saw the Magic Christian, so did I.
Yep.
Since we don't have to say any more about why people do the things they do.
So that's how we, you know, and meanwhile, the phone call goes out to the guy who's really more of a telex guy at UNICAL. Congratulations! You're going to be president of Afghanistan. Get the funny hat out. And put away the Brooks Brothers suits, Buster. It's bathrobes for you from here on. But, you know, having watched all of this go down, Hamid Karzai, you know, he's a company man. And so he takes the job. And he's got a brother who has real business acumen for producing heroin.
He seems to be like a world-class businessman in that industry.
Yes.
World-class. I mean, from what I read.
I'm being asked by Cassie, how much of this can I use on a school exam? And I'm answering, almost all of it. It can be all sourced.
Well, Ken, well, you're bringing it all back. This is great. I'm so glad I asked you about this. Because this is, hell, if you want to, you can go back to Lawrence of Arabia to figure out what the hell is going on there. But,
and, you know, you wouldn't be wrong in doing that.
No, but this recent stuff is more of a...
You know, they re-ran the original Star Wars movies on Fox last weekend, and I, guilty pleasure, sat down and watched them all. And, you know, the first movie is the only one where you get, you know, a serious dose of Alec Guinness. He's nothing but voiceovers after that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was sitting there watching it thinking, you know, for as much of a role as Obi-Wan Kenobi plays in this film and in the whole series, really, just as... Because my mind works this way, Reverbo. I'm so sorry. Just as George C. Scott, at least according to my old voice coach at the University of Alabama, did nothing but mail in his Buck Turgidson character when he got Patton, so too Alec Guinness saw a quick, albeit small, paycheck and did nothing but mail in his role from Lawrence of Arabia as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, I can see that.
And by the way, I'm getting a difference of opinion now from Marty, who says Cassie can't use any of this, especially in Texas. She might get expelled. So there is that.
Well, somebody has to pick up where Molly Ivins left off. It'll have to be Cassie.
It may well be.
Somebody has to stand by their principles. So the Afghanistan was... We thought, right through the picking, due to the total unstable, after they beat either al-Qaeda or the Taliban, I don't know who was So whoever pushed the Russians out of Afghanistan, then Afghanistan basically became a fundamental Islamic run country, right?
Right, and it's got all the human rights abuses that all the right-wingers are screaming about now, Reverbo, where they say, but we can't get out because it won't be safe for women. Don't anybody tell the right-wingers, but it ain't safe for women right now.
Or remind the right-wingers that they hate women anyway.
Yeah, well, there's that, too.
That's just not easy.
You know, the difference is English has a word called misogyny, and in Pashtun it's just called everyday living.
Women and hillbillies and people at Boak Hall, they're all in the same group.
You darn tootin'.
But, okay, so it's totally unstable. It's just Afghanistan is basically hanging on by a thread. It's run by a bunch of illiterate thugs. And so we figure this is the... So we get the Taliban to see if they can't just get the ball rolling over there.
Yeah. But then,
7 years later, what's been happening in the meantime? Sounds to me like we're occupying Iraq. I'm closing in on the Caspian Sea is what I'm doing. We're occupying Iraq. Afghanistan is still, I guess, up for grabs. We got, Turkey is still a huge ally of ours. That's right. That's on the, right there on the western side of that oil. And the only problem I can see is Iran.
Well, and Pakistan. Because Reverbo, in the Tuesday night speech, every time Barack Obama said Afghanistan, he said, and Pakistan.
I heard that.
But if you're looking at the big board, you will note that there is no border with the Caspian Sea for Iraq, but we can move troops in and out of Iraq at will.
I'm looking at it like it's a risk, the risk game.
Yeah.
I mean, you can put your army, you can be at the Caspian Sea in half a day.
Right, and you can have a rapid response force in either Afghanistan to the southeast or Iraq to the southwest. To get it would pretty much anything you need in the Caspian Sea. And remember the George W. Bush administration, or, you know, should we call it the Bush-Cheney administration, whatever, also fomented a little bit of nastiness in Joe Stalin's old home country, Georgia. And also sitting there by the Caspian Sea is the ever-not-quiet Azerbaijan. And lo and behold, who has a beach on the Caspian Sea but Turkmenistan? And not too awfully far from the Caspian Sea is Uzbekistan. Remember Samarkand? That's Uzbekistan. And it's the leader of Uzbekistan who, incidentally, boils his political opponents alive. Nice guy. And they have a border with Afghanistan.
Yes, they do. A little one, but it's right there. Well, you know, if you had Afghanistan...
We've got them surrounded.
Well, first of all, I will not pronounce Pakistan, Pakistan. I refuse to do that. But just keep going here. If you had Afghanistan and Iraq, of course, we're not going to have Afghanistan. Now, sorry about that. Well, you could really put the squeeze on Iran, couldn't you?
Oh, sure you could, but look where the Caspian Sea is, Reverbo.
I see it.
And where are you going to send, since you can't do Iran right off the bat, where are you going to send that pipeline?
Looks to me like you got to go through one side or the other.
Maybe through Turkmenistan, down through Afghanistan. And then a short ride down to, say, you know, you've got some infrastructure there, Karachi.
Yeah, our friends in Pakistan might let us, put up the pipeline through this.
Oh, that'll be a done deal. As long as all those nukes don't get into the wrong hands.
All those. God, it just gets more complicated.
Isn't it fun?
It has nothing whatever to do. I thought this whole time it was the millennia-old crusade. We just can't let those go. The Christians and the Muslims, the world is going to end where it began, right there in the Fertile Crescent, right there in Israel. And this whole time, General Butler was right.
If we could figure out a way to carve out a state from southern Afghanistan and just Katie bar the door of what happens up north, I think we'd do it. Because that's your Helmand province, your Herat, your Farah. Oh, I think we had some trouble there recently. Kandahar. We do remember the name where Kandahar comes from our little history lesson from Eugene Finnerman the other night, right?
Okay, but not really.
That's old Afghani for Alexandria.
Oh.
Because as you get north toward Kabul, you start getting into that general mess known as the Hindu Kush. And it's just tough up there. But you got some relatively flat ground you can work with in Kandahar province, in Helmand province. Great pipeline country.
Yeah, great pipeline country. I'm just dazzled by all of this. You know,
well, I'm pretty proud of the ability to pull this all together because I didn't know I had those brain cells left.
God, you have unsuspected depth. You're just a wealth of knowledge about the Middle East. You know, this is, none of this would have happened if those Soviets hadn't gotten into that arms race with us and lost. Because no one would have dared. You never had, Turkmenistan.
Well, God Almighty, it's not like the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff didn't work their little asses off all through the late 50s and early 60s trying to get a nuclear war going while they felt like they could win one with the Soviet Union.
They used to have all these places. We're there. My God, what a mess. So here we are. Well, we've
been all over the big board tonight.
We have been all over the big board. And so it is, in fact, it is that unseen hand of capitalism that keeps working its magic around the world, isn't it?
Well, how unseen it is, up for debate, but yes.
Well, it's quite out in the open, but I think from this moment on, I'm not going to, the world may one day beat me, but after tonight, it will never fool me.
And I know you took issue with that line the other night about, I will never again be bamboozled by what was the line?
Well, eloquence. Confuse eloquence with intelligence.
Yes, I will never confuse eloquence with intelligence.
Well, I like the line. I just thought it was, you had to be careful with it because there are some who are both eloquent and intelligent. You got to make sure you figure out who those people are.
And you know what? I got to add one more thing about the speech the other night, Reverbo. And that is this. I can remember being in this chair and in a chair over at, terrestrial radio, behind a microphone, every time George Bush said, we have to fight him over there so we don't fight him over here. And I remember having hissies and screaming, just be straight with us. Tell us what they're doing over here. We want to help. There's lots of hunting rifles all over Appalachia and bored rednecks. And we'll be happy to go take out some splinter cells for you if you want. But you got to tell us first. And then he'd come out and say, even though we can't talk about it, we have stopped many terrorist attacks as I have kept you safe, as is my duty.
Yeah, those ones that we can't talk about. The one that the mayor of Los Angeles didn't even know was happening.
Right.
That one.
And at the same time that Bill O'Reilly's threatening to bomb the Coit Tower in San Francisco. But anyway, those were all furniture-kicking moments for me. There are just moments where I'm so offended by that kind of I'm smarter than you, I know more than you, you know, BS, that you just want to scream, fine, tell us what the plots were. Tell us how many people with C4 impregnated toenails you've stopped at Kennedy.
What an asshole cheating. He continues to be condescending and patronizing every time you see his ugly face.
But the problem is, and this is sort of where my morals and scruples get in my way, because I could be a real good partisan. You know, maybe if I was a little better partisan, I'd be on terrestrial radio and hustling vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off Swedish mattresses. But I'm not, because I can't. And I can't be partisan when I hear my party's president, at least still ostensibly, say, even as I talk to you, numerous terrorist plots have been foiled in the United States which have come from that very region. Because the same urge wells up in me, Reverbo, and I go, bullshit! Tell me what they were!
You could call them...
We're the American people. We can take it straight. No chaser, baby.
Elvis referred to those as couch shooting moments, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was that a left shooting moment? Yeah. I don't know.
Boy, go get me a peanut butter and banana sandwich and bring me the gun. I'm going to shoot the TV again.
Well, I'm sure, anyway, this has been great. I'm sure glad you have cleared this up.
I don't know how much I cleared up. I think I made more problems.
Well, we still don't have that. I guess the whole depressing thing about this is that I guess all that talk about that green energy future we were going to have is somewhere buried under the Caspian Sea, and it's black, and it's kind of gooey.
Yeah, it's going to be a sort of a very dark green that you have to use a fracturing process and a mass spectrometer to really see the green part of.
So are we really here just dealing with powerless to deal with these forces anymore?
That's a question for you guys to answer. Because if I say yes, we're powerless, I can just go home. Oh, wait a minute. Okay.
They keep talking.
I can turn the lights out and just, you know, go work on my Welcome to Walmart.
But today, the jobs conference, the NPR, I hate it when they have to editorialize this. Well, if they can't get back, you know, the Democrats can't get people back to work, you know, it's going to hurt them in the midterms. And I'm thinking, huh? What, people are going to be nostalgic for those prosperous years under the Republicans?
Long memory is not something we're known for.
Well, you didn't have short memory for that one. Jobs created under Bush, zero.
But remember, see, you're doing it to me again.
Well,
remember the 2004 election when George W. Bush actually had the gall to ask people, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
God. I wonder if it's all those hormones and steroids in our food. It's just making people just...
No, and then Ohio happened.
Well, that's just terrorism.
And John Kerry, much to the chagrin of John Edwards, said, I'd love to stay and fight for Ohio, but I have a Christmas dinner meeting in Sun Valley, Idaho, with my good friend, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who just called me a girly man. The pheasant under glass is magnificent, I'm told. And with $45 million in his war chest, bugged out before the Ohio contest was even much started, let alone over.
Then we all at the mercy of powers that we cannot defend or control or fight.
Oh, and ELO, who is from there, notes in the chat room, we don't call it Ohio anymore. We call it the scene of the crime. And, of course, the operative who was in charge of so much of the computer underpinnings of the Bush administration, lo and behold, made the stupid mistake of getting on a small aircraft and him gone now.
Yeah, you did forget to throw that in when you were describing what happened. You know, if you're going to have a business arrangement with the Bush family, don't forget. Do not get into that small plane.
Yeah, now, the small aircraft are not your friend.
God, I can remember there's a bad image in my mind. You know, you remember when the Phil Spector trial was going on, and we'd be seeing these pictures of what ostensibly was a humanoid or an android, a replicant-looking human man, it seemed like. And in fact, that was Phil Spector. And it was just shocking and horrible. And I remember thinking the same thing when I saw Manuel Noriega's face back then. You remember that?
Oh.
Not a good looking man.
No, he was his icon in the early days of computer intertube conversation was a pineapple.
Jeez. No, I gotta let you go. I gotta digest all this stuff.
Well, and the thing is, you know, no, we are not impotent to all of this, but we are. But the only way any of it changes is by massive determination on a popular scale.
God, if we could just turn the populations of these countries. Well, they can't fight the Marines. They managed to beat the Russians. They had helicopters and bazookas.
Well, there's your American exceptionalism.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see I agree with Albert, though. It's just horrific. You gotta stop killing people.
It would be a bonus.
I mean, what did Bin Laden, really, what did he accomplish when you think about this? What do these people win? It's just more innocent people dying.
Yeah, but see, you can't apply that calculus to Osama bin Laden because he spends a lot of time playing Hello Walls, a song I do not have but really ought to.
I just don't see what ultimately, when history looks back at all this, what are they going to say we all accomplished?
They're going to say the same thing about us that they said about every empire. Because very few empires ever voluntarily stop being one. I mean, I think on a nation state level, empire is more addictive. It's like political crack.
I think you're right. God, it just must be the biggest rush. We can't even imagine a rush that must be.
And by the way, the guy on the small plane, the Republican operative, Michael Connell.
Oh, yeah. He was scheduled to testify.
Wasn't he, though?
In D.C., he was going to talk about how they funneled those, that whole internet, they funneled the election, the ballots somehow, the digital, some of it went through Tennessee and then back up to computers in Ohio. He knew how to do all that, how they did all that.
Dead men tell no tales.
Yeah, and then he was just left, as I recall, he did. He left a wife and he had 3 or 4 kids, orphaned and widowed.
Right.
Make it personal, my friend.
Make it personal, Reverbo. Thanks, brother.
Bye. That was
Bye. Thanks for putting up. I needed to do that as much for me as for anybody else, because all of this stuff gets sort of scattered throughout the little internal series of tubes between our ears. And every now and then, it's good to pull them out and sort of put the jigsaw puzzle pieces together again, just to remember why this stuff happens. There is no more evil family on the face of planet Earth than George Poppy Bush and his pearl-clutching beast of a wife and their demonic little clan. It's just not. And the evidence is there to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Rolling onward, I think.
Mom.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Good, Gene. Let me go ahead and take off the speaker.
Okay, thanks, Gene.
Well, damn, Bob. There ain't really anything I can add to that. It was funny because I was thinking about this stupid thing all yesterday. And,
You there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm thinking about this, pardon me, this is hard to explain now. See, I remember being in Arizona there with
Take your time.
Sorry. This is sweet.
Want me to come back to you in a minute?
Oh, man. Wait. Of course not. They're really pretty. Come about this. Okay. Let me see if I can do this now. In Arizona, there was a disability activist I once talked to.
Okay.
And basically, what she said was, all the disability all our advocating and everything that we do doesn't mean a thing. What makes the fact of it?
It's okay.
What makes the fact that we have the kind of accessibility that we do is basically the veterans coming home that are broken. And they're the ones that are advocating and stuff like that. And basically, I was talking to my friend in the UK because she's more into the disability scene than I am. And, you know, she said, you know, that's right. If it hadn't been for the veterans, the ADA wouldn't have passed. And all that stuff.
Probably right. Hard to stomach, isn't it?
Yes. So when he was talking about... Fuck me!
Tell you what, Gene. I'm gonna put you back on hold, and you just sort of.
Actually, I'm fine.
Okay.
But I just wanted to say when you were talking about old Edifice the other day, and of course we said, you know, you said that they didn't deserve it. Well, maybe they didn't, but maybe they did vaguely because they didn't get Edifice out of there or whatever. And it's like, I feel, you know, we talked about, you know, changing parties and all this stuff, but are we really going to get it over with until we provide an alternative to their system? And I know that's hard, and it's a bitch. And having to think about that is, that's just, and crazy, and Jesus, I hate this parasite that is stuck in our country, and I wish it would, I don't even want it to go away, because it'll just show up again. I just want it to just be gone. Sorry, Agent Fred, but that's how I feel.
I understand, anyway, I understand.
I'll let you be, because it's way too long and complicated, and I'm way too emotional to talk about all this, but it's like, oh, gosh, what's this? I hate being up here. You know what I mean? Anyway, I'll let somebody else get on that can be coherent.
Oh, now, don't beat yourself up, Gene.
Yeah.
We'll delve into it a little deeper on another evening, okay?
Sure.
All right, later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. There are tolls that are taken. That's all I can say. Hey, welcome to the program.
And now with that dark moment, on to even darker moments with this bit of trivia. What is the number one highest misconduct of police brutality per 1,000 officers? Your turn, Bob.
Okay.
What state?
What state?
Yes.
Police brutality?
Yes, highest misconduct.
You know, I think you'd have to rule out the more populous states just because the population would artificially lower that statistic, or I'm guessing, if I understand statistics. So that takes your New York and your California out, right?
Yes, you are warm, sir. You are warm. Yes, New York and California. But I'm not going to tell you which direction you are warm. Yes.
Arizona.
No, I was surprised to find out, number one, Vermont, with 29.3%.
Could that be because Vermont takes a dimmer view of that sort of conduct and therefore defines it more broadly?
I don't know. They don't like the Ben and Jerry's hippies I hear over there. But number two, can you guess number two?
Wow, if number one's Vermont, and it's not Arizona.
You're not going to like this, Bob.
West Virginia?
Yep.
No, it doesn't surprise me a damn bit.
Yep, number two, West Virginia. So I wanted to talk about something that you brought up with the Afghanistan thing, and I don't think we talked about it, and it's I think it's pertinent to the discussion, and that's what the cadets were reading while Obama was doing the speech. And one of the books was called Kill Bin Laden. Another book was called On Killing, The Psychological Cost of Killing in War. But the other one that was really interesting, Bob, and this is the one that I take you down the wormhole because I've never heard of this guy, but apparently this guy is selling like crazy. And I guess he is very popular in the military ranks. His name is Brad Thor. Brad Thor.
Well, you know, that certainly sounds macho.
Now, Bob, here's what you should
do. And if that's his real name, I'm a...
Yes, it is his real name. Now I want you to see, now you have to see this. Type in bradthor.com and I just want to hear your reaction on looking at this website. And these are the kind of books that our cadets are reading. They're living in fantasy land, Bob. They're living in extreme.
Okay. First of all, we have a question from Texas Betsy. Where did you see them with the reading material?
Oh, for the police brutality?
No.
Yes. You go to Yahoo, and you go to just type in U.S. Army cadet reads a book, and you should come up with it's photo 581 on 581 on Afghanistan, and it talks about the books that they're reading. But the one I found interesting was the one that nobody mentioned, which is why I'm bringing this up. Which is the Brad Thor book. I'd never heard of him.
Well, I'm desperately trying to get his incredibly busy website to load.
Exactly. Yes, it is kind of busy, but I'll give you, it's like entering a Call of Duty 2 Modern Warfare type environment.
Well, the flash animations at the front of the website are certainly that way.
Yeah. And it kind of shocked me the fact that,
Oh, now I got to read one of these miserable pieces of pulp crap, don't I?
No, you don't. I mean, it's probably just Tom Clancy.
Brad Thor, the Apostle, number one New York Times best-selling author.
Yeah, but this is what they're reading. This is what they're reading before they go into battle, stuff like this.
Well, we can't all be reading Charlaine Harris's Suki Stackhouse series now, can we?
I know, but it's... Oh, by the way, speaking of books, what did you think of the? I don't know if you got to it. Did you get a chance to look at the Gopi site?
No, I have not.
Oh.
I was gone all day yesterday.
Well, I guess I'll close with it with this one, this book. For those people who don't know, there is a conservative couple who have put together a children's book called Teach a Donkey to Fish. I kid you not.
Oh, God, I saw that in my email earlier today.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. This is going to ruin your day. Okay, yeah, I'm there.
Yeah. So the funny thing about it, people, is the fact that they have a liberal, they call the donkey Libby, and she wears bell bottoms and has a flower in her hair, and she's a donkey. So you get it?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. You...
And Goffy, wait, it gets even crazier. And Goffy, I'm not making this up, people. This isn't The Onion.
And this is goppy.com, Goffy.
Yes, goppy.com. And Goppy is an elephant.
Of course Goppy is.
Yes, who teaches Libby how to get money to buy her backpack. Probably that she needs for weed or something of that effect. Or maybe...
Oh, my God!
yes. Wait, I'll tell you something to me that is absolutely beyond...
Why do you bring me these? Why do you scar me, David?
I like to torture you. Exactly. I like to torture you. Now, here's the funny thing. Now, this is the reason why I brought it into. I think these authors are totally crazy, and I have, I think, good circumstantial evidence, and here's why. If you look on the side, there is a post, there is a thing where it says blog. If you go to her blog, Bob, I'm not kidding people. She apparently wants to sell her blog. She hasn't made this book, thank God, hasn't taken off like it should. And I guess the conservatives aren't on her side completely yet. She hasn't,
well, she can't keep up with the woman who keeps turning out the, Mom, there's a liberal under my bed. Mom, there's a Kenyan under my bed. You know, that kind of stuff. The children's book thing is nailed down by that woman.
But she's probably next in line. So I think she's probably, you know, this is her first book. But anyways, there's a blog link on her site if you go to goppy.com. Now here's the interesting thing about it. She does journal entries in the style of the character of Goppy with politics of today.
Nobel Peace Prize? This is from October 12th.
Yeah, this was.
Goppy's confused. Goppy's been taught all his young life that you have to work for what you get. It adds value and importance to the item you are trying to achieve, like the time Goppy had to clean yards for 5 straight Saturdays in order to save money for the new skateboard he wanted. He missed a soccer game, 2 birthday parties, and worked in the rain just so he could earn money. But guess what? He takes better care of that skateboard than he does any other wheels that he owns. But back to the point. Goppy heard on the news the other day that our president won the Nobel Peace Prize. He won it basically for the vision of unity he has for this world. Now, no disrespect to our president, but Goppy thinks President Obama needs to show what he has done to deserve this award. Stand up for America, Mr. President. By the way, Libby thinks it's great. Any prize that has the word peace in it, she's all for, no matter who wins it.
I'll tell you what's the best part about that blog entry.
Oh, Jesus, there's a book trailer.
Yeah, the book trailer. That's a good one, too.
You've already been there. Is it worth playing?
I have not played the audio on it, so it's a treat for me. I don't know.
Oh, dear God.
I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. Brad Thor's background music is playing.
Uh-oh.
Son of a...
Now it's in stereo.
Well, where'd it go? Oh, okay. Let's. Or is it play? Is it gonna play? I got circles.
Goppy has a choppy.
Goppy has bandwidth problems.
Goppy is extremely choppy. I think the best part, though, about the blog, though, is the fact that apparently Goppy's writing it, but the blog entry is done by the author that says Andrea. Not very.
Well, you know, and we can. I'll go here because you know you are after all the one who brought us the soda can.
Yes, yes, the soda can.
I just looked at Gopi and Libby.
Libby is great.
Why couldn't she be Demi?
Well,
because then she'd have to be like hot, I guess.
I think she wanted to taunt the liberals with the name Libby.
But then why isn't the elephant Connie? Oh, Connie Conehead's already taken.
Why is it the elephant Fanny? Get it? I mean, no. Fashy. There we go.
Baggy. Baggy the, I mean, you know, elephants are kind of baggy.
Yeah.
Baggy the elephant. The rendition of Libby the donkey.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Gopi's kind of whitish gray.
I asked my conservative friend this. I said, do you think this is, because he always talks to me about indoctrination. I said, do you think this is indoctrination? And he said to me with a straight face and voice, oh, no, this isn't indoctrination. I was like, what?
No.
I love
the lead-in on the main page, though. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Gather your children. It's time for the talk. You know
for
the one.
For those people who want to see it, it's...
Gopi.com, GOPPY.com. You know the one.
Well,
the talk that most parents put off to the early teen years, the same talk that we as parents don't know how to articulate in a way our kids fully understand. A stuttering explanation of what could happen is what guides the conversation rather than what prevents the dreaded results.
Great. Great reading selection material that I bring to the program that you guys can put on your Amazon list.
I got to go review this at Amazon. No, I'm not going to.
Well, with that, I'm going to leave you for the evening.
You're a bad person.
I know.
But in a delightful kind of way, David.
All right.
Gopi.
Later.
You know, later. But honest to God, I thought this was going to be something like agape love. You know, like the fundamentalists. Yeah, maybe that works.
Oh, yeah. But one thing before I go, you'll find this interesting, and you might want to do some research on it because there are people are talking about it. But I don't know if you knew about this, but there's a GOP handler who was in the Ralph Reed circle, and she's putting out a tell-all book, ladies and gentlemen, and it's going to be good. Let's hope she doesn't die of carbon monoxide, though. So you might want to look into research that because I'm sure the passages are going to be just great.
Oh, and by the way, the cadet book story is up at Raw Story.
Yeah, yes, it's up at Ross Story as well.
Yeah, he's reading a book called Kill Bin Laden.
Yeah, apparently that is one of Glenn Beck's favorites.
And Ross Story notes, thriller written by one of Glenn Beck's favorite authors contains anti-Obama conspiracy subplot. Second cadet hailed as hero by conservatives was reading book critical of Bush administration.
One last comment, though. Isn't it amazing how the West Point uniforms look so much like in 1984.
Oh, yeah, but the thing is, those are ancient uniforms.
Oh, I'm sure.
You should see the 1812 dress uniforms, or maybe Mexican war uniforms. Those are really spiffy.
Well, we should start getting scared if they have a 1984 embroidered on.
Indeed. David, take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent and finder of all things bizarre. That's David from Maine. Wow. Where did the evening go? We will yet talk about Uganda, and we will yet talk about New York. I don't want to just try to hustle through both of those, and they're sort of interrelated in, you know, 7 short minutes. That doesn't seem quite fair. I'm scarred by Gopi the elephant. Update, by the way, though. This comes in from Brother Luke down in East Tennessee. Update on the Monroe County, Tennessee grand jury Obama treason indictment. I'll just read it straight off of the Advocate and Democrat. The Monroe County Advocate. For a brief moment Tuesday, Monroe County became a center of political controversy. Walt Fitzpatrick, otherwise known as Commander Walter Fitzpatrick III of Sweetwater, has long sought to indict President Barack Obama on treason charges and was given a chance to appear before a Monroe County grand jury Tuesday. Monroe County is one of the few places in the country where a citizen can present a case to the grand jury. In most areas, only a prosecutor can bring a case to the grand jury. Fitzpatrick is claiming President Obama is actually Barry Sotoro and was not born in the United States and is therefore serving illegally. Now the story gets funner. Fitzpatrick has made his case before the Monroe County grand jury before, but Tuesday was the first time that an indictment might have been returned. The grand jury indictments will be sealed until December 7th, but Fitzpatrick's comments after he came out of the grand jury room indicated he did not get what he wanted. Fitzpatrick told his followers it was looking like they would have to try the case in another county. Fitzpatrick has also sought indictments. Like I said, it gets funner. Has also sought indictments against grand jury foreman Gary Petway and assistant district attorney Jim Stutz, saying they are guilty of obstruction of justice in his attempts to indict the president. Petway declined to comment on the charges against him, saying he would wait to see if he was actually indicted, but said he believes the Obama case is over and has been for a while, as, and this is the fun part, as you cannot indict someone in a county they've never set foot in! But that's the beautiful thing with conspiracies. The failure to prove the conspiracy only makes the conspiracy appear to be stronger in the weak minds of those who have predetermined its truthiness. Isn't it great how that works? But that's okay. There are more Tennessee counties, and apparently Commander Walter Fitzpatrick III will continue his carnival roadshow as each grand jury sits by each term. You know, what are you going to say? Everybody needs a hobby. Even insane wingnuts. Because just because I am frustrated with President Obama doesn't mean I have turned my back on him. And it also doesn't mean that I have sort of that I've suddenly realized the error of my ways and become a teabagger. The right wing is still crazier than a sprayed roach, and they are still incredibly dangerous, and the more frustrated they get, the more dangerous they become. And that's not just to President Obama, but to little old you and little old me. They are a scary lot. Thank you very much for the couple of contributions toward our continued operation that have come in the last couple of days. More than a couple. Thank you very kindly. I would say that, a rough estimate of where we are for December is at about $300. Long way to go. But I sure do appreciate everybody stepping up to the plate because that's the only way this continues. I personally don't relish the idea of saying welcome to Walmart, or even trying to get them to let me. God, can you imagine the sort of self-effacing humiliation of having to apply for work? Ew. Not that I'm averse to work. I'm averse to working for Satan. I'd probably be the guy who wound up opening the door on the day after Christmas sale. Goodbye, Bob! Thanks to everybody who tries to help keep this going. Both the folks who do so regularly and those who do so as they can. It all matters. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. In many ways, there's no liberal radio on the Internet if it's not for Ben Birch and the White Rose Society, going strong now for something like 7 years. Can you imagine? Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, sorry about last night, but even if I had been here, there would have been no show. It's a funny thing that I've noticed. And, you know, when you get older, you start paying attention to things like this because it makes your lumbago hurt and you have to go get a mustard plaster and things like that. But anyway, about this time of year around here, every year, we get a honking Jim Dandy dose of wind. I think the intelligent design of it is to blow down the rest of the trees and blow over your leaf piles so you get to do it all over again. And that's what happened. It's, you know, like 60-mile-an-hour winds rattling down the hollers around here. And I wasn't here. I was down in the Coal River Valley. But upon returning, I found out there was no electricity. Because, well, coal may keep the lights on, but it doesn't do it very well in the wind. One of these days, the power is going to go out, and I'm not going to be able to stop Agnes from picking up the phone and trying to find Don Blankenship's phone number and saying, "Hey, you pencil-thin mustache freak, I thought you said coal keeps the lights on. Well, it's not doing a very darn good job." Well, ma'am, that would be Appalachian Power. No, that's just the middleman. You're the one making the claim. Get the juice going, you fat freak. One of these days she's going to do it because she was threatening to do it again last night. But anyway, everything went off here. The streaming computer went down. Eventually the battery backups gave way and all the power went out. So even if I had been sitting here, there would have been no show. So my apologies. But there's a show tonight. We may have to do some backing up and catching up, but there is most assuredly a show tonight. So, well, you know, oh, be joyful. And my apologies for last night. So we will dive right into things. We might have to backtrack a little bit because we didn't really have an opportunity to do a whole lot of follow-up
on President Obama's glorious announcement of the glorious escalation of our glorious war in Afghanistan. You know, when you think about it, wars in Afghanistan, that's the kind of thing that empires do. And you know what? The reason we don't do it very well is we're not set up to be an empire. The Constitution is not designed for empire status. And that's why we're not very good at it, I think. Because we're not supposed to be. But like I said, there may be some backup. I think it would be appropriate to look back to the aftermath of that really, really good speech. And just, you know, get a little sense of perspective. Of course, I don't know, maybe everybody's, all the other liberal talk guys have already done this, but it somehow seems to bear repeating. There were, of course, right-wing hissies. Lou Dobbs had a hissy. Who the hell does this president think he is? President? But it's not that. It's not so much who President Obama thinks he is as it is who does the Congress think it's not? Now, I've been saying this for a long time now, but it bears repeating. If we want to make war on Afghanistan, the Constitution is rather explicit on how you go about it. Now, the president might ask for it, but it is the Congress's job to declare war on somebody. And maybe, just maybe, there ought to, some brave congressman ought to, I mean, you know, one of those that really believes in going and killing those Afghans, ought to tender a declaration of war that is in line with constitutional principles. Call me crazy. Call me a cab. And see how that flies. And if the Congress goes, oh, hell no, we don't want to do that, then they just can't vote any more money for the sort of empire wannabe adventure in Afghanistan. It's that simple. Well, it would be that simple if, you know, Congress wasn't covered up from floor to ceiling in hypocrites, but you know what I mean. Because the Constitution is rather explicit. No, it's not rather explicit. It is explicit. That only the Congress has the power to declare war. But why would we let something like the Constitution get in our way, get in the way of our attempt to join the Junior Empire Builders Club, huh? But I told you, and of course I don't think you were in much disagreement, I did tell you that the right wing, if Obama sent 30, would want 60. If Obama sent 60, would want 120. If he sent 1 million, they'd want 2 million. Told you, didn't I? Guess what? I was right. So here's how it shakes out. Monday evening, or Monday morning, I guess it was. Monday morning, Fox News contributor Karl Rove appears on the Today Show. What? There's nobody that NBC can find to go and talk to Matt Lauer besides Karl Rove, but they talk, and Karl Rove makes it, well, you know, he says he's got an opinion about Afghanistan, right? Sure.
And you have said in the past that the president was wobbly on Afghanistan. He's going to announce tonight he's going to send between 30 and 35,000 additional troops there. Wobbly anymore, or is that a definitive action?
That's a definitive action, and if the president does do that, I'll be among the first to stand up and applaud.
Okay, you got that? I'll be among the first to stand up and applaud. Well, Barack Obama did that. So immediately, well, there he is in his natural home on Fox News. And remember, he was going to stand up and applaud?
But for now, the president should be as tough as he can be. And I didn't see that tonight, did you? I did not see a Winston Churchill-type performance. The president was slick, but did he rally the world to fight the horrendous Taliban? I don't think so. but I could be wrong. Summing up the president's speech tonight was, okay, but not exactly.
Don't worry, this is just Bill O'Reilly, and it's all the falafel talking.
Now the top story, the best analysis anywhere. We begin with Fox News analyst Karl Rove in Philadelphia tonight. You know, there wasn't this sense of urgency that